Are you struggling to lower your bad LDL cholesterol, even though you may be taking a statin, swapping steaks for salads, and exercising while listening to this podcast? Ask your doctor if Repatha Evolocumab is right for you. With Repatha, you can dramatically reduce bad cholesterol and the risk of another heart attack while enjoying life too, because you're human. And with convenient self-administration, you can take Repatha in the comfort of your own home. Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Repatha can cause serious allergic reactions. Signs include trouble breathing or swallowing, or swelling of the face. Most common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site. Visit Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA. Talk to your doctor today about Repatha.
Hey, it's Kimberly, host of the Start Me Up podcast. If you like your politics with some loose talk and salty language, you're going to love my show. I interview the coolest people like Mary Trump, Kathy Griffin, and DNC chair Jamie Harrison. The Start Me Up podcast has an easygoing, casual style and a strong emphasis on left-leaning politics. We also have frank discussions about sex and more than a few spirited rants. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup or wherever you get your podcasts and start listening today.
Thanks to Third Love for supporting Mueller, She Wrote. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone, so right now they're offering our listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/AG to find yours today. And thanks to Noom for supporting Mueller, She Wrote. Getting in shape isn't just about losing weight. It's about learning healthier habits and feeling better about yourself. Noom helps us learn how to develop new relationships with food. So sign up for your trial today at Noom, Noom.com/AG. And thanks to Sagely Naturals for supporting Mueller, She Wrote. Sagely Naturals has superior standards for quality and ensures their CBD products are completely THC-free. Sagely Naturals has me feeling like my best self. Get 20% off your first order at sagelynaturals.com/AG.
This is Sarah Kendzior from Gaslit Nation, and you're listening to Mueller, She Wrote.
So to be clear, Mr. Trump has no financial relationships with any Russian oligarchs.
That's what he said. That's what I said. That's obviously what our position is.
I'm not aware of any of those activities. I have been called a surrogate at a time or two in that campaign, and I did not have communications with the Russians.
What do I have to get involved with Putin for? I have nothing to do with Putin. I've never spoken to him. I don't know anything about him other than he will respect me. Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing.
So, it is political. You're a communist.
No, Mr. Green. Communism is just a red herring. Like all members of the oldest profession, I'm a capitalist.
Hello and welcome to Mueller, She Wrote. I'm your host, AG, and with me as always are Jaleesa Johnson.
Hello.
And Jordan Coburn.
Hello.
We have an immense show for you today. It's immense. It's hugely. First, I'd like to thank our patrons. Because of you, we're able to hire another person to join our team.
Yay.
And we can pay them well above minimum wage and offer them health benefits and paid vacations. So thank you for supporting this show and Women in Podcasting and the forthcoming Daily Beans, our new daily news podcast coming in July. Stay tuned. if you're a patron, you already hear it. It's old hat for you.
Fun intro, though. I'm excited for everyone else to hear that intro. That theme song, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that They Might Be Giants theme song? Mm-hmm. It's good. It's really good. Mm-hmm. I love it. I love it. And I love the way that you place it with the
words. Yeah. That little bed that they made for us. Yeah, it's bed. Nice.
Also, guys, we're coming to a city near you, including Minneapolis this weekend and Philly, July 17th, Chicago, July 27th. I'm still trying to hook up with John Cusack. We'll see what happens. And San Francisco, August 30th. And we're about to announce Boston in November. Details and ticket links are at MuellerSheWrote.com. And by the way, it wasn't 2 days that we sold out the VIP for San Francisco. It was 2 hours.
I saw someone tweet that. How did they know that?
They probably were trying to get them 3 hours
they
in.
They went in after 2 hours and they couldn't get them.
Oh, wow.
And then I looked at the picture that I sent to our agency to find out, did we really? And they were like, yeah. And I relooked at the picture and it was 2 hours, not 2 days.
Damn.
I couldn't even register in my head that it would have been 2 hours.
That's yeah. Awesome.
San Francisco, we love you.
Yay.
And we're coming to the Independent, which is a really cool venue.
Yeah.
From what I hear.
Yeah. I like how you said we're about to announce a show in November.
And then we just like didn't.
An embedded announcement.
Boston.
An upcoming announcement.
It's like when you have plans to have plans. Yeah.
It's a wicked show.
I'm about to announce I'm doing this.
but I'm not going to.
Yeah.
This week we have Hemant Mehta. He's the friendly atheist. We have him on for the interview because we had God on, so I figured we had to do an equal time for the atheist.
That's fair.
And we're guests this week on the latest Skullduggery podcast, as well as the God Show podcast brought to you by God. And we recorded a movie review of the 1985 film Clue with the hosts of Gaslit Nation this weekend. So look for that on their feed soon. We're doing this resistance cinema.
Yeah, we've been busy.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, that was amazing. All of that with the Skullduggery guys. God was great.
Yep.
Yeah, the girls at Gaslit
Nation.
I like how
we were doing a Clue review and we just ended up in a Russia conversation.
A big Russia conversation.
Yeah. A good one.
Yeah, that was a good one. Definitely listen to it once that comes out.
Yeah, it was fun. And then I'm like, hey, can we get back to the movie? Because I was doing this one. I want to talk about Russia for a minute. And they're like, all right.
Yeah, no, they're so much fun.
Yeah, those ladies are great. Thank you, Andrea Chalupa. Thank you, Sarah Kenzie. You guys are amazing.
They're so smart and articulate and funny. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really great to just talk to them and listen to them. And Andre was at our Brooklyn show.
Mm-hmm. Yes, right? She was.
On our panel.
Yeah, on our panel for the Brooklyn show. She was great. Well, guys, we have a lot to get to this week. So let's start with my favorite segment, corrections. It's a mistake. It's hard for me to say I'm sorry.
Oh, I made a mistake.
All right, guys. First, for clarification, the Stonewall riot happened in New York City, not San Francisco. I don't know who said that.
I said that. That's my bad. I'm the gay one. We're all a little gay, super gay one, and I got that wrong.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm super straight. I'm not even a little gay.
Oh, I got to turn in my rainbow card.
I knew that
card.
Was New York, but I didn't correct you. That's my bad.
It's
actually, we are all a little gay. I was kidding about that. I'm super straight. I was part of the straight pride parade in Boston.
That's right. I saw you.
Did you see Milo Yiannopoulos was their guy, their parade guy? What do you call him?
That's fucking hilarious.
What do you call the head of the parade?
The
marshal?
The
stomp master general?
The field marshal or something like that. He was there. They picked him.
Wow.
They picked a gay dude to be in charge of the gay pride
parade.
Well,
he's the worst gay dude ever. So there you go.
Yeah. He probably has more straight pride than straight people.
So funny.
Yeah. Oh, there are a lot of straight people, though, at the pride parade marching at the front, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is cool because they're allies. And
we love
allies. Honestly, Milo is an ally to them.
He's the only person I would refer to as openly straight. Do you know what I mean?
That's a good point. Huh? And if someone could email us the name of the person that leads the parade, because it's a specific name.
I think
name.
It's a Grand Marshal.
Oh, yeah? Okay,
or
okay.
Parade Marshal.
I was thinking of a marching band. There's another name for the person that leads, but they weren't a marching band. So.
Oh, yeah, the with the scepter.
What do you call? Do you know what they're called, Jordan?
No idea.
Damn.
The band leader?
Tweet
candy
us, guys.
The candy man can.
The guy with the stick with the ball on the end of it.
I imagine it's a long peppermint stick for some
reason.
Oh, that's
adorable.
Why am I? It's because I've only seen Macy's Holiday Parades.
Either that or Wizard of Oz, right?
Yeah.
I only go to Christmas parades. Christmas pride.
I have a good life.
Also, anesthesiologists are doctors, according to one of our amazing anesthesiologist patrons. Though he says a doctor's note, like the one written for George Nader, would normally come from a surgeon and not an anesthesiologist.
Ah, yes.
But they are doctors. I didn't know that. I didn't know they were full MDs. I'm totally going to insult all anesthesiologists right now, but I thought they were X-ray techs or LVNs or I didn't know that.
Interesting.
They make more than everyone that is involved in an operation.
I learned that from Grey's Anatomy.
They actually deserve it.
Totally.
That's the most dangerous part.
Oh, yeah. Your ass is either dead or in immense pain if they do their job wrong.
Right. And that's everyone says, the surgery itself, no biggie. The anesthesiologist part is always a risk.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I wonder what approach they would. Yeah, because Grey's Anatomy was very vague about what they do. I remember the guy sitting and reading a magazine, but I'm sure they do adjustments. They probably just know when things go wrong what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And they have to measure it and watch and check
vitals. Yeah.
Damn. Thank you, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you to all the anesthesiologists.
Yes, thank you.
Doctor anesthesiologist.
Yes.
Doctor. Czechoslovakia ceased to be a country in 1993 when Slovakia and the Czech Republic amicably broke up in two different countries in what is called the Velvet Divorce.
Whoa.
Much like my former band, the Velvet Tongue, which
That's
we were talking
right.
about earlier this week. That piece of information sprang from our discussion of Cohen's phone being pinged in Prague. In 2016, the last time I was in Prague, I called it Prague, Czechoslovakia, because I was there in 1990. So I was like, it's Czechoslovakia,
I like
interesting.
It. May I say, pinged in Prague sounds like the weirdest porno name.
Yes, it does.
We could
yes,
make it.
Does.
We, actually,
resistance cinema.
I immediately got a gross chill down my spine because that's where Nader was arrested
no.
and put in jail.
Disgusting human being.
Ugh. Yeah. The term spear fishing is different from just fishing in that it's not an indiscriminate wide net that they cast. It's researched and tailored to convincingly fool a specific target.
Nice.
So they specifically went after Podesta's shortcomings. I don't know.
Yeah, that explains the spear reference because it's like very focused and
pointed.
Yeah,
yeah,
pointed.
Either that or you just don't send it to a bunch of random email addresses. You send them specifically to these email addresses at like hillaryclinton.org or something.
Right, right.
Specifically tailored for those people or individuals.
Yeah, what about like in the movie 300 when all the spears came at once, though?
Yes.
Like, that's a big spear phishing.
They were spear
there.
Humaning.
Yeah. Oh, we should get that gif going from 300 at the end of the scene where they're shooting all the arrows at once.
Yeah, I don't know that movie. I just am in love with the guy who stars in it.
Gerard Butler.
Yes.
This is Sparta. You never seen that?
No, I know of it.
But you just haven't seen it in
I'm
the...
I'm not a Sparta person.
Interesting. Well, I went in not knowing what it was. And I was like, whoa.
It's intense.
Yeah, yeah.
I took Latin in high school. That was enough for me. Like, I get it.
That's fair. That's fair.
I see what happened.
A lot of Persians in that movie.
I see
movie.
What happened here.
I yeah, know. Yeah. I like Persians. But it was just like, I was like, whoa. A lot of Persians.
They really like
spoiler
holes.
Alert. Yeah.
Rome falls.
Oh, you told me. Oh, I can't watch Rome now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, I love Gerard Butler, though. P.S. I Love You is one of my favorite movies. Super guilty pleasure. And that guy's super hot. He does my favorite SNL sketch of all time, Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, that was so good.
It's seriously the best because it's a comedic point of view I would have never thought to take. Mm-hmm. And it's the simplest one where they're singing Beauty and the Beast. And it's Kristen Wiig.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, oh, I can't wait for the curse to be broken and you won't be a beast anymore.
Oh, shit.
He thinks she's the beast.
That's hilarious.
She's like, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. I can see Butina being in this sketch if she ever wanted to appear in SNL, like a Beauty and the Beast like remake for that.
That would, but Gerard Butler can sing a lot better. And so can Kristen Wiig, even though she was making fun of it. Like, she comes out and her first opening line is, tale as old as time, you know, just in this really super bell voice.
Yeah, yeah. I always called her Kristen Wiig. I am so sorry.
It could be Wiig.
Well, two eyes makes. Oh, is it two eyes or two G's?
It's two eyes.
Yeah, that sounds like Wiig.
Could be.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Another thing that you did besides the stone wall in San Francisco was you called RGB RBG.
Oh, I always do that. Yeah, yeah.
But you called RBG RGB. I just did it.
Yeah, I was like, wait, Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
But we could change your name to Ruth Gator Binsburg.
Ooh, yeah, yeah.
Which I think rolls off the tongue
like
better.
Tig O'Biddy is just like, yeah, mix
right,
it up a little bit.
Tig O'Biddy Binsburg. That's what she goes by.
That's her new nickname.
She's totally for it too, because you know,
oh yeah,
women. And finally, apparently cows do fart, a veterinarian listener has told us.
Wow.
But the burps do contribute to the climate crisis.
That's okay. True. Yeah. What about female cows? Do they
she's
fart?
Like, having been a large animal veterinarian and being at the receiving end of cow farts, I guarantee you they fart.
Oh,
like,
my goodness.
Oh,
I,
God.
Somebody said they don't fart. I was like, I took it for, I heard it on the John Oliver show or
something.
Yeah.
Well, that could have been, a joke now that I think about it.
Yeah. Oh, dang. Okay. Fake cow fart news.
Damn you, Oliver.
Guys, thank you again for your corrections. Your constructive feedback means the world. If you have a correction, just head to MullerSheWrote.com, click contact, and then select corrections so you can build us our compliment sandwich. We will get it right eventually. All right, guys, let's get into this week's news with just the facts. All right, guys, this week, Turtle Dick Mitch McConnell blocked yet another bill in a raft of legislation intended to secure our elections from foreign interference in 2020 and on into modernity, into the future. These bills include a Dem measure, a Democrat measure that would send $1 billion or so to state and local governments to assist them in securing their elections. And if you remember from the Mueller report, we just talked about this, I think, in part three, Mueller didn't investigate state and local election counts and left that to the FBI. He's like, well, although we know that the vote was probably hacked, we didn't look into this. Why? I thought that was your deal, but not his deal. He carved himself even a smaller, little, narrow piece of investigatory history. And there are no federal protections for this, for voting in the states and local state boards of election and stuff like that. So basically it leaves the states to fend for themselves. And in states like Kentucky, where the Republicans in charge benefit from Russian interference, there's just a lack of incentive to fix it. So we now have the Republicans in the Senate blocking the funding. And then there was a bipartisan measure that would require internet companies like Facebook to disclose the purchasers of their political ads. Scandalous for some reason. Turtle Dick Mitch blocked it. Another bipartisan bill was to codify cyber information sharing initiatives between intelligence services and state election officials and provide incentives for adopting hand-marked paper ballots. But McConnell is blocking that too. He's blocking them all, saying our state and local apparatuses are doing just fine and don't need any additional security. It's just fine. Nothing to see here, despite Mueller's findings that the 2016 elections were subject to sweeping and systematic interference by the Russians and probably six other countries. And all 50 states were breached, guys. But
leave no state behind.
Totally fine. Yeah, it's all equal. It appears that our best hope is through congressional appropriations, where Democrats have a little more leverage because they control the House, meaning like a spending bill passed last week in the relevant House subcommittee that could serve as an opening position. It contains $600 million for election security, with a stipulation that if states want to access the money, they have to replace their direct recording electronic voting machines with a system that has individual, durable, voter-verified paper hand-marked ballots. That's a lot of
requirements,
qualifiers there.
Yeah. But I am all for this.
They're all very important because, and we talked to Jennifer Cohn on our show about the importance of hand-marked paper ballots. Mm-hmm. But we'll see what happens. So now they're just trying to put it in the budget.
Yeah.
And they're like, we're not going to pass a budget unless you give us some money for election.
And it's so much more personal. Protection. Like, I want to leave a little cute little hand note, like written note, like, I don't know, I love you, Hillary. Like, I'm like, I heart Obama.
Yeah. You can just,
yeah.
Personal comment.
Will you vote for me? Check yes. No. Just waste my vote.
Check this box. Maybe. That's ranked choice voting. Yes, no, maybe.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
This past Monday, Trump associate George Nader was arrested as soon as he set foot back in the United States. I think he landed at JFK for charges. These were charges filed in April of 2018 under seal for transporting child pornography. Really fucking disgusting child pornography. The time, it's all disgusting.
I mean, I was going to say, yeah, but totally, like, especially
But I
disgusting.
Figured, like, I'm like, I'll just read this. And it was 10 times worse than I even imagined it could be.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Anyway, the timeline of events here, according to public reporting and what we've learned from other sources, is that in January of 2018, Nader was stopped at Dulles, right? This is back when Mueller was stopping and frisking mm-hmm. people at airports and private jets. I don't think he had a private jet, but he was stopped in Dulles, brought in for questioning, and he had three phones on him, and they were seized. Nader provided three proffer sessions and one additional session that wasn't a proffer session, answering questions posed by the Mueller team regarding the investigation into Russian interference. He was given partial immunity for his testimony and remains one of the only figures in the investigation that was granted any kind of immunity that we know of, at least. And meanwhile, a month later, the FBI is dicking around with the phones. They finally broke into him and found a bunch of child pornography on one of his three iPhones.
God,
a lot of it, like 12 videos.
Wow.
And by then, Nader was done cooperating and had left the country. So in April, they filed charges under seal for child pornography, for transporting child pornography. And they filed it under seal so they wouldn't alert him wherever he was in the world that he was being charged mm-hmm. because they figured he would destroy further evidence
mm-hmm.
or avoid returning to the U.S. Mm-hmm. Or avoid arrest so he wouldn't be extradited. But he came back this week, didn't realize, I guess, that he was being charged with... They didn't think the FBI would find the videos on one of his phones.
Yeah. I bet he's just been living in complete paranoia.
Oh, that's you, but so. Why would he yeah. come back, right, if that's the case?
Yeah, I don't know.
He thought he was fine since they didn't file anything
long
publicly.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked.
Yeah, it did
their
work.
Plan. Yeah.
So he was picked up at JFK. He's being held without bail because he's a flight risk. He's got like a chalet in Lebanon and some other fucking chalet somewhere where rich assholes live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think in Czech Republic. I can't remember. But anyway, he's got a bunch of houses overseas.
Yes.
And he's worth $3 million. $1 million of it is in cryptocurrency.
What a worthless piece of shit to be worth so much. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money for a shitty person.
And he's actually the guy, if you don't remember who Nader is, he was the guy at the August 3rd Trump Tower meeting, the most consequential meeting of everything, even more important than the June 9th, 2016 Trump Tower meeting.
Mm-hmm.
He's the guy who paid Joel Zammel of Psy Group $2 million after Trump won the election, but not because they did any work for them.
Oh, no, no.
$2 million
just for funsies.
Thanks for the chat.
Yeah. Here's 2/3 of my net worth.
Yeah, thanks for the memories.
Totally, right?
Exactly.
And he set up the meeting or was in the meeting in the Seychelles with Eric Prince. That was just an accident. We just bumped into each other. And MBZ of the UAE. And he's just an all-around piece of shit. And I think he has a lot to do with... I think he might be caught up. I have beans on him being caught up in the super secret subpoena battle from the company from Country A.
Yeah.
But I don't know yet. And also maybe he was the guy in Prague of summer of 2016.
Oh, paint in Prague. Yeah.
Even super space beans on the fact that the reason Cohen had his phone was because he was blackmailing him.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if he would be at all open or able to like strike a plea deal with this case.
I don't know how I would feel about lowering your child pornography time in prison.
I'd feel very badly about
that.
To get
this kind of information.
Totally, yeah.
They might have enough on him in the other case to work with him, because he had 3 proffer sessions and 1 non-proffer session, which means he blew up a proffer session and lied in it.
Yeah.
Which may be one of the reasons he left the country before he was charged with anything.
What if he turns on other people, though, like other oligarchs that are involved in sex, like especially child sex trafficking stuff?
Oh, yeah.
If he gave evidence on Mogilevich, his child pornography and is like nothing compared to his child sex trafficking and
right.
pornography.
Like get to the source of the ring. Yeah, yeah.
Right. But so do you let 12 child pornography videos slide to get the guy who is in charge of all child pornography in the Eastern Bloc?
Unfortunately, it sounds like that's how it would go down, right?
Is it still called the Eastern Bloc?
I'm not sure.
I'm all 1989 in my head, you know.
Yeah, that's a tough call.
Tear down the wall. Come on, guys. It's about time.
Maybe you can still get him for something and then, like, yeah, take down the bigger guy at the same time. Like, don't let him get away with it entirely.
Yeah, plea deal that's, yeah, like, less of a sentence, I
for
guess.
For sure.
Yeah.
Or I would like to hope that his plea deal would be less of a sentence for what he did in the Russia, UAE election interference stuff. But the fact that you're facing 15 to 40 already would make you a lot less likely to cooperate.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So I feel like you would have to offer to take time off that table in order to get him to do so. And I guess, I don't know how I feel about it. I just don't know how I feel about
it. It's really tough.
I don't know either.
Wouldn't want that job.
The recidivism rate of molesters and child criminals, you know what I mean?
Yeah, not like
is pretty high.
It's
children.
His third time.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's just when it got caught.
That's insane. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, he has a preliminary hearing this Monday. He's been remanded in custody until his trial starts. He's not leaving jail probably for the rest of his life.
Good.
At least that's my hope.
Mm-hmm.
I would hate for it to be like, oh, we're going to give you 4 months. Thanks for cooperating. Oh. High five, you know.
Yeah.
Go hang out with your buddy Flynn, who's out of jail also.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to know what those amazing plea deals were cut for, because it's not what's being charged.
Mm-mm.
That's in those, I feel like that's in those referred, somewhere in those referred grand bargain, counterintelligence, some sort of investigation. And I hope they end up getting... I hope we find out about it.
Yeah, same.
I need that closure. Interesting interjection in the Nader story by Seth Abramson, by the way. He spent a lot of time in Prague. So much time, in fact, he was arrested and charged there for child pornography and molesting children. He was actually not just transporting child pornography. He was actually molesting underage boys. Which makes me wonder about the summer of 2016. Mueller report allegations of someone from the Trump campaign being in the area, paying off the Russian hacking hubs that were set up there that we learned about recently from public reporting. And then when I thought about that, like I said, I started thinking about the secret subpoena battle with company from country A. Are they involved in the payoff?
Mm-hmm.
Is that who that is? There's just so many dots that mm-hmm. I'm not sure about.
Yeah, we need a murder board for real up in here. Mm-hmm. Have you considered putting one up on the wall?
We have the curtains.
That's true.
And I, you know.
Yeah, connecting dots.
That's tough.
The murder board's in my head.
Yeah.
Guys, the White House is continuing its obstruction of justice spree this week as it blocked Hope Hicks and Annie Donaldson from complying with congressional subpoenas to appear and hand over documents. Hope Hicks, though, did hand over some documents, but neither will comply with the order to testify June 19th and June 22nd, I think, with the White House providing cover for them under executive privilege. This was the plan, I think, when the White House deemed the entire Mueller report protected by executive privilege. We were like, why are you doing that? This is why. So that any testimony about it or any documents related to it cannot be handed over. Nadler praised Hope Hicks, Jerry Nadler, he's head of the Judiciary Committee in the House, praised Hope Hicks for handing over some of the documents as a show of good faith, and says he will continue to negotiate with both women for the next few weeks as lawmakers attempt to arrange public testimony pursuant to the subpoenas. Now, obviously, the president has no lawful basis to block these subpoenas, despite what the White House counsel Pat Cipollone said. Said informing Nadler, he wrote a letter saying Hicks and Donaldson have been instructed not to comply, saying they do not have the legal right to disclose White House records to third parties. Hicks has testified in, she already testified in 2018 to the House Intel Committee when it was Republican-led, but she did not answer questions about the transition or her time in the White House, only campaign stuff, and apparently that pissed them off, so they want to bring her back in. But her document production was also only about the campaign and not about her transition or time in the White House.
Right.
Yeah. That part where she was sitting at the desk with the giant electoral map taped to the front of it that you had to see before you went in to talk to the president to remind you that he won.
Yeah, the douche flag.
Yeah, yeah.
Douche flag.
I like that.
Rhymes with douchebag.
Mm-hmm.
Also this week, Manafort's facing charges in New York for real estate fraud. We reported on this. And while that happens, he gets a cushy new home at Rikers Island.
In solitary confinement, yeah?
Yeah.
Wow.
But his solitary, I think, is, from what I understand, a 6x8 cell with a toilet in it. So it's like the hole. It's not like Shawshank.
The white puffy stuff.
Yeah, the big fluffy pillow walls.
Yeah, well, that would be nice.
Which you make. That's yeah, like psych, sound, right? So
psych
fun.
Ward. Yeah. Like a fun house, yeah.
Yeah, it's not like that cement hole with, you know, no light or anything.
Right, but it is still torture, right, to a degree?
Yeah, to have no clock and be alone 23 hours a day is, I think, mentally torturous.
Mm-hmm.
But he has to be there, and I think, I mean, we had this discussion this week. We were like, why are they putting him in solitary confinement? A lot of people said it was for his protection because Mogilevich and the Russians are out to get him, and I'm like, I don't think so. I think he's a hero in Russia. I think he blew up his plea deal and he didn't turn in anybody. And I think they're cool with that. I think they appreciate it, kind of like Maria Butina.
Yeah. So who's punishing him, then?
I don't think it's a punishment. I think he is still criming.
Oh.
Yeah, they don't want him talking to people.
Yeah, he's a flight risk, right?
That's what they had to do before when he was in regular prison. He was making phone calls and doing that foldering where you share files through Gmail.
That's right.
With his lawyers bringing laptops back and forth.
Yeah, I can see him Shawshank Redemption in it. Like, you know, like digging a little hole out of there, too. He's crazy. Yeah.
He's not smart enough.
Yeah, but it is definitely conceivable that in that entire prison population, there's someone that has ties to Russian oligarchs.
100%.
That he could talk to.
There's probably a prison guard.
Yeah. Oh, my God, goodness. That's true.
There's probably, like, I wouldn't be surprised that 10% of the guards at Rikers aren't fucking on Mogilevich's payroll.
Wow.
That's how big this guy is.
Oh, I believe it. That'd be an interesting, like, spin in the movie there. You know? Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
So, yeah, I think he's in there because, remember, he was out on bail. He had two ankle bracelets on, and he wrote an op-ed.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, you can't do that. So they put him in jail, took his ankle bracelets off. And from jail, he was witness tampering and suborning perjury with his two buddies about the whitewash report about Tymoshenko in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
With that whole group, Skadden and Vanderswan. And then they're like, all right, fine. So they put him in solitary confinement. Like, we have to keep you away from everything and anyone because I think that's why he's in solitary.
Got it.
Either that or just to protect him from General Pop. But just a, you know, guy with gout like that.
Yeah, guy with gout.
Can't put him in General Pop. No gout shaming.
No, just Manafort shaming.
Totally. Remember last week when I said Congress was planning to conduct Mueller hearings after the Memorial Day holiday?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, beans come true. This week, both the House Judiciary and the House Intelligence Committee, chaired by Democrats Nadler and Adam Schiff, respectively, will begin public congressional hearings related to the Mueller report. I'm calling them the Mueller hearings. I suggest you do the same. In the judiciary, they intend to bring in panels of experts to include former federal prosecutors, along with John Dean, former White House counsel that blew open the Watergate hearings, to testify about what obstruction of justice is. He's pretty good. He pretty much knows what that is, John Dean.
And oh, yeah.
Also, some of these, you know, the 1,000 former federal prosecutors who signed a note that said Trump obstructed justice, and if he was a citizen, he'd be behind bars.
Mm-hmm.
What is required to bring criminal charges, they're going to talk about that, like the requirements of you know, charging someone with obstruction indictments, and how the facts in Volume 2 of the Mueller report meet those requirements and why. So then in the House Intelligence Committee, Adam Schiff over there, they're focusing on Volume 1 and the counterintelligence investigation. 2 weeks ago, Schiff subpoenaed the Attorney General, Bill Barr, to hand over information on the counterintelligence investigation opened by the FBI into Trump and his campaign, opened by McBabe. None of the counterintelligence findings are in the Mueller report, nor have there been any additional briefings that we know of to the Gang of Eight by the FBI on that part of the investigation since Comey did it back before he was fired.
Mm-hmm.
And Barr, that's the one where Burr went to the White House and said, hey, guys, listen to this. Attorney General Barr has refused to hand anything over, and so Schiff threatened to hold him in contempt for noncompliance. Barr said, all right, we'll give you some stuff. Please don't hold me in contempt, bro. And this is the same thing that happened in the other committee when they asked him for unredacted Mueller material, but they voted and held him in contempt within that committee. But that vote goes to the full House this week, along with a full House contempt vote for Don McGahn for defying his subpoena. So Schiff will start counterintelligence hearings this Wednesday in the House, including having two FBI agents. Two FBI agents. Come and testify. It's going to be fucking
when the
sweet.
Drugs kick in.
guys. It's two FBI agents.
two FBI agents. Their names are Stephanie Douglas and Robert Anderson, Mr. Anderson.
Oh.
As we know, 40 FBI agents were co-located with Mueller's team, and counterintelligence evidence would be sent back to FBI HQ, that's the headquarters at Quantico, as it came up in the investigation. And counterintelligence investigations do not charge people with crimes. They determine if someone is compromised by a foreign government, if they're willful or unwitting agents or assets, and by what degree of confidence. So, you know, they might come back and say something like, Trump is compromised. He is a Russian asset. He is unwitting.
Damn.
And we have extremely high confidence.
Like,
And we have moderate confidence that he is a willful conspirator and compromised. Like, so they do this rating system.
Totally.
What you do with that information, I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
Impeach.
I was going to say, I hope it ends with him not being there anymore.
Ideally, but I think we would need to flip the Senate first, right? You think it's possible in 2020?
Yeah, I don't even know how you do that. Like, if you find out that somebody's compromised and is a high counterintelligence asset risk, do you just go and take them out of the White House? Who does that? Who's in charge of that?
25th
it's got to be
Congress. Or Congress. Yeah.
Yeah. Only I would hope options, that at right? that point, more senators would be willing to do that.
32 seats are up for grabs. I don't know how many are Republican. But
don't you think they already know? Or are they just not saying because it's not politically or publicly known?
I think that and the evidence isn't incontrovertible to the general public enough for them to stand behind that. I think it's too risky in their eyes unless their constituents are going to be like, oh, yeah, this is fucked up, which apparently it would take a lot for that to happen.
Yeah, it looks like it. But that one lady at the Justin Amash rally where she's like, I had no idea there was anything negative about Trump in the Mueller report because she just listens to Fox News and the Attorney General.
God totally. Damn.
And you're like, that's what they're telling her.
I've been considering listening to Fox News just to hear what the fuck they're telling them. Like, just so I'll know what approach to take when they're, you know, crazy comes at me. I'm like, oh, no, I heard that, too. And by the way,
it's
this is
weird.
Why, yeah.
Like when they released the voicemail of John Dowd, dangling a pardon to Flynn, they didn't even cover it. They were just talking about like how the moon is big tonight.
Whoa.
And you can see Jupiter's moons in your binoculars. Go
Which
check
is cool.
it out. And the moon is part of Mars.
You could watch a little bit of Fox News, memorize something that was said, and then break conversation with them and be like, hey, did you see tonight on Hannity when he said kids deserve to be in cages because they're brown? Yeah.
Yeah.
Also remember when they said that Trump is a criminal and should be impeached? Be like, oh, I didn't see that one. Oh, yeah, dude, it was crazy.
That's right.
We should create our own Fox News, but like Fox knows. Like you just like it's one letter off, but people get it confused and then just go on and deliver like what sounds like a Colbert report, but then like subliminally slip shit in like that.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Like remember those commercials he used to play with the cowboy, the catheter cowboy?
Yeah, to get through
the
Trump.
I think it was John Oliver.
Yep.
And he'd be like, oh, and by the way, there are three separate branches of government.
Yeah. He paid for real ads to like subliminally change
to
Trump's
run on
mind.
Fox News.
Yeah.
With the catheter cowboy, like the actual guy.
That's beautiful.
From Liberty Calf.
I love John Oliver.
Or whatever it was.
He's the best.
Yeah.
Yeah, his little side projects are great.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's see. So both committees have separately sought testimony from Mueller himself. They're in negotiations, right? And Nadler says he's close to issuing a subpoena for Mueller's public testimony. Mueller has said he would testify privately, but Nadler doesn't want that. He wants him to testify publicly.
Hmm.
And so he's going to subpoena him. And Mueller isn't going to defy a subpoena.
Yeah, subpoena power.
Yeah, I would literally die if the White House blocked Mueller's subpoena and Mueller went, cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that doesn't seem like Mueller's style. He follows the rules.
He is a rule guy.
Mm-hmm.
We know because Trump wasn't indicted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sanctimonious choir boy.
Yeah. The Caputo tweet.
Yeah.
Sanctimonious choir boy. I think that was Comey.
That was about Comey.
Samesies.
Yeah. They're both rule followers. For the most part, Comey.
They're cut from the same choir.
Yes.
I wanted to ask Michael Isikoff this when we were interviewing him, but I wonder what it would take for Mueller to say anything publicly in a testimony like that that goes outside of what he specifically wrote in the Mueller report.
I don't think he would. I think he'd be like, I'm not going to answer that.
Yeah. I'd like to believe that there's some breaking point in which he would pull a Comey and put some editorial shit in there.
Oh, yeah. Do like a book, a tell-all called like Preaching to the Sanctimonious Choir Boy or something.
Yeah. I just love that he's his own lawyer. So there would be nobody next to him. He would just have sidebars with himself.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Mueller, what were you forced to shut down the investigation? And then he just backs up and
huddles on himself.
Talking like, looks back and forth, does some shifty eyes, and comes back to say, I'm not going to answer that question.
Like,
he lawyers it out in his own head.
Yeah.
But he needs a second.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's going to be great. Right. Public testimony, but he's not going to tell you anything you want to hear.
Nope. But what we need to hear, though.
Yeah, we do need the public to hear what is in his report, and it's fine. Just sit there and tell us.
Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah. It's still, I would say, enough. Even.
Yeah, every news station would be playing it. All the gyms would be playing it. It would really make a difference. Gym. No, that's what I notice every time something goes down.
Even
the gym.
If it's just like, you know, all right, so tell us about paragraph 19 where you said obstruction of justice this and mm-hmm. and tell us about that. And he'll just repeat what's
get those
in
sound bites circulating. Yeah.
Yes. I don't think he's a sound bite generator.
No, yeah. But he'll say things that people can just clip and be like, listen to this shit.
He won't come out and say, I didn't exonerate Trump. He'll I didn't not do this because he'll do all this talk that is very precise.
Jargon, yeah. But it's important. Even that would be better than people like having to read something. Unfortunately, this country is not big on reading.
It's true. I think they're going to help a lot. The Mueller hearings will help. So will the counterintelligence hearings, which are also the Mueller hearings. But some more details have come out about Jerry Nadler's pitch. In that he's framing. Oh, so Jerry Nadler is now backing impeachment.
Yes.
If I've told you this, he's flipped on impeachment this week. He's low key pushing Pelosi behind the scenes to allow him to open an impeachment inquiry in the House Judiciary, and he wants to centralize all investigations into Trump and Trump's companies and Trump's family under the umbrella of the House Judiciary Committee. At a meeting of Democratic heavy hitters this week, House Judiciary Chairman Jerry Nadler pushed the House Speaker Nancy Pelosi on impeaching, eliciting her prison comment heard around the world.
I like that.
That's my news voice. Yeah, Nancy had said behind closed doors that she thinks Trump belongs in prison, and everyone was like, what? You can't see that. That's bullshit. Okay, lock her up.
Right?
Yeah.
But I love how stern they're getting. Just in the last few days, they both have kind of flipped their script.
I also love how Republicans think that accidentally slipped out and someone leaked it.
That was
a designed comment to be heard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's not okay.
She changed her mind. She used to be like, you know, maybe sort of impeachment, and now she's like, well, prison for sure.
Yeah. You might hate her, but nothing she does is a mistake.
No.
She's always been saying too that she's just trying to go through, wait until it gets to that tipping point. She's always just been like, let's just wait. Not mm-hmm. necessarily like, no.
Right.
Just not right now.
And I was always just waiting for that moment. I'm so glad it's here. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Her whole strategy might be either we have to wait for more public support, which I don't think is the case. What I'm starting to believe is she's waiting till it gets closer to the election.
Yeah.
Honestly. But I don't see a reason to wait.
Mm-hmm.
But that, you know, whatever.
Yeah. It is like a giant cannonball, basically.
We'll impeach him.
Oh, yeah.
And so Nadler's pitch to Pelosi is that he's framing his idea around two central points. First, impeachment proceedings would centralize all the investigations into Trump, which are currently sprawled across multiple committees, right? And that would free up the other committees to do the work of legislating and passing bills, even though Turtle Dick Mitch won't bring any of them to the floor of the Senate for a vote. So there's really no point other than to pass the bills like you're supposed to because you've done your job and get it on the record that Mitch won't do it so mm-hmm. that you can hopefully beat Mitch in the 2020.
Right. Yeah, the turtle in the hair.
The second point is what we've been saying all along. Opening an impeachment inquiry would give their subpoenas more teeth and allow the House committee to obtain information and evidence far more easily than a regular committee hearing would. It's an official judicial proceeding. Pelosi objected again, as did Adam Schiff this time, he doesn't want to lose his current position investigating Trump in the House Intel Committee. Mm. And I don't know if that's because he just likes the limelight and he likes what he's doing, or if he thinks it's a truly bad idea. I don't know what Schiff is thinking there.
Yeah. Right.
But because his counterintelligence hearings begin this week and he's finally getting this counterintelligence information. He's like, I don't want to handle that. I did all this work, guys.
Yeah.
Let me fire the gun. You know?
They might let him work with them though, right? Like, ideally, he could pass along the information and still be a part of it.
He would have to work with them.
Yeah.
But he wouldn't get any of the credit.
Aww.
His committee and Nadler's committee, though, arguably have done the most work when it comes to the Mueller investigation. So he's probably also maybe experiencing a little bit of that. Like, I'm just getting cooking.
Yeah.
Like, I have been working behind the scenes. It's all about to come out. And I've got, like, let me
have this moment.
Put me in, coach.
And I had to live through fucking Nunes.
Oh, my God. And I get that. He's totally, you know, deserves credit. But I also hope that he's, like, more about the cause. And he's like, you know what? Here, take it. I'm here to help.
Yeah, I can imagine having to, like, sacrifice sitting next to Nunes for that long.
Yeah.
And then finally being free and then getting almost there. And then Nadler's like, I'm going to have it.
But for bigger teeth, I think he's the kind of dude that'll do the right thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, we'll see what happens. Either way, I don't care whether they're all done in judiciary or whether they're sprawled out. I really don't. give an F. I think they should open an impeachment inquiry, get the teeth to the subpoenas, get the information they need, have bigger standing in court because it's a judicial proceeding, impeach the MRFer.
Mm-hmm.
And this is interesting. Lawrence Tribe has a new idea about impeachment, saying we could impeach him in the House without ever intending to send articles to the Senate for trial, just censure him in the House. And I thought that that would a great idea. But now I disagree with it. I think that forcing the Senate to go down on the historical record forever, saying that they won't acquit him, I think will help smash them in 2020.
Oh, yeah.
I think that, you know, a lot of people are saying that the problem with impeachment is that Trump's going to walk around saying, oh, you failed impeachment. I think it's a better position to be in saying, we impeached him, you failed to convict him,
yeah.
He's a criminal.
Hell yes.
Especially 2 years down the road when he does something that's even more egregious than what he's already done, and he can 100% have the public backing of removing him from office, and then we can double blow to the GOP and say, oh, and remember that time when we could have stopped him and you refused to even look at evidence?
Oh, yeah.
Or you have to live, Mitt Romney, with the rest of your life, for the rest of your life and the rest of history in the history books is going down as the person who acquitted Donald Trump of obstruction of justice.
Yep, he'll be the Johnny Cochran. Or
how do you feel about that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
People like Johnny Cochran, though, still.
I don't know, that's true.
We already know that Trump is going to say we tried to overthrow him. We already know that. He's going to say that whether we impeach him or not. He'll do that with the Mueller report findings. A failed impeachment in the Senate, like I said, it's not going to change his narrative. But it, like I said, it will change ours from we didn't do anything to we did it and these Republican senators didn't do anything.
Exactly.
And that all of history is going to judge that. So I'm still for full impeachment.
Same.
Same.
We're still. All right, cool. We're all in agreement.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, guys, we'll be right back. Hey, this is AG from Molly, She Wrote, and I'm here to sing the praises of Third Love. I am officially obsessed. It's the only place I get my bras now. So they're co-owned by a woman. Not only do they show real women in their ads with wrinkles and rolls and piercings and tattoos, and not only are they disrupting the male-dominated bra industry in the best way possible, but their bras are seriously the most comfortable and perfect-fitting bras I've ever owned. And that's because they use an easy fit finder quiz to find your perfect fit using millions of measurements from real women. They don't just consider your number and your letter. They take into account issues you have with off-the-rack bras like digging straps or cup spillage, and they also consider cup shape. And they're the industry leader with over 70 different sizes. It's so easy to use. Just pop online, take their 60-second fit finder quiz, and they help you identify your breast size and shape. And they have half sizes because a lot of women and people who identify as women fall in between sizes, and I'm one of those people. So I could never get the perfect fit until Third Love made it possible. And they have a 100% fit guarantee, you guys. You have 60 days to wear it, wash it, put it to the test, and if it's not perfect, and this is a new thing and I love it, just return it. Third Love will wash it and donate it to a woman in need. Returns and exchanges are free and easy, and it's the most comfortable bra ever with breathable, lightweight materials and straps that don't dig or slip, and they're tagless too. Third Love knows there's a perfect fit for everyone, so right now they're offering our listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/AG now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/AG for 15% off today. You'll be glad you did. All right, guys, welcome back. On to Judge Emmett Sullivan and the ongoing legal adventures of Michael Flynn. Da-da-da. If you recall, during a heated sentencing hearing last year, Sullivan was disgusted with Flynn's criminal behavior. You disgust me. You disgust me. Yeah, this flag behind me is disgusted by you. Remember that?
Yeah, the flag is vomiting.
Disgusted with his criminal behavior. He even asked Mueller's team if they'd consider charging him with treason, if they'd thought of that. Did you guys think of that? And then he had to walk back that comment a little because they were like, whoa. It was at that time he knew about everything he'd done with regards to Turkey, but we did not. But Sullivan knew, right?
Mm-hmm.
He also knew about his conversations with Kislyak, Flynn's conversations mm-hmm. with Kislyak, and potentially more conversations we don't even know about.
Yeah, the John Dow thing, he probably knew about that ahead
of
time.
He totally did. Mm-hmm. And he was actively assisting Trump with finding Hillary's emails and that he'd been helping with WikiLeaks. He'd been dangled a pardon by Trump's team, like you're saying, that voicemail. He knew that. Sullivan then told Flynn, hey, man, it would behoove you to go forth and cooperate more,
mm-hmm.
As much as his criminal ass could muster. And then come back and see me for sentencing. Like, this is going to be in your best interest. And they went back and forth like 6 times on that, where it's like, you really, really don't want me. Go, please cooperate more, or I am going to throw your ass in jail for a really long time. Even I don't care if Mueller's asking for no time.
I almost wish he did, but I trust that Mueller got good info.
Yeah, and I think that what Sullivan knew and saw, he was like, he can cooperate more and he needs to cooperate more. So mm-hmm. go do that, you fucking shit. Piece of shit. So that's what he's been trying to do, right, Flynn, at least maybe. And recently, Judge Sullivan entered three orders, minute orders. One was to release the voicemail of Trump's lawyer dangling pardons and intimidating Flynn's lawyer. And the second was to make public all redacted Mueller report materials related to Flynn. And the third was to provide the transcripts of Flynn's calls with Kislyak, the ones he lied about to the FBI in January of 2017. And we got unredacted, mostly unredacted versions of those interviews this week. The government released the voicemail, but not the redacted Mueller report and not the Kislyak conversations.
Hmm.
Their reason was, you already have everything and we just don't want to. I mean, it was like a really flimsy reason that just didn't make any sense. They think that what they were trying to say is, it doesn't matter what was in the conversations. Mm-hmm. What matters is he lied about him. Mm-hmm. That's what you're charging him with.
Yeah, yeah. But still, why hide it?
And we're like, actually, everything that's in the conversations goes to the core of how much time he should serve in prison. But anyway, we thought Sullivan would get pissed at this. Sullivan doesn't. He's usually like, excuse me, motherfucker. I asked for some shit. But he didn't, right? And the government still does not acknowledge that the conversations with Kislyak even took place, right? Though we all know that they did. Flynn mentions them in his sentencing memos and pleadings, right? The unredacted pleadings that we recently got, where he said, oh, you guys probably recorded these conversations anyway. And that was redacted. The government doesn't want us to know that they know that these conversations exist, or at least they're not admitting to it.
Right.
And we all thought Sullivan, like I said, would be pissed. But he totally acquiesced with our argument. And those are the facts. My beans are on these conversations having been obtained under FISA warrants, and they're totally classified, and that there are other conversations we don't even know about that could pertain to open and ongoing investigations. I think maybe some Lindsey Graham conversations are in there.
Mm-hmm.
Because we remember that questioning where Lindsey Graham was trying to find out from the intelligence community, if you guys were recording me, you would have to tell me, right?
And they're like, you're a cop, right? You got to tell me.
and they actually said, we got your request, sir. We're working on it.
We'll process your application like everybody else.
And he wouldn't drop it. He's like, but you have to tell me, right? Like, sir, we know that you want to know if we recorded you. We'll get back to you. And then he went golfing with Trump and then all of a sudden flipped and loved Trump when he thought Trump was a fucking kook before. And those are his words, not mine.
I wonder why.
I think Trump had those conversations and blackmailed Lindsey into being on his side. We may never know. Those are super space beans.
Yeah, or probably his promise to protect him.
Yeah, or,
like,
you know, you better kiss my ass or I'm going to leak these conversations.
Mm-hmm. Where's that picture? I can imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I still want to know where the RNC hacked emails are.
Mm-hmm.
So Flynn has an updated hearing June 14th. We'll be in Minneapolis that day. And he will either ask for another delay or Sullivan will sentence him with what he has. Sullivan may have been allowed to view those conversations under seal, ex parte, in camera, or whatever they say. But there's been no indication of that publicly or the court or on the court docket. You know, usually we'll see something on the court docket like filed under seal, order, in camera, ex parte.
Right.
Discussions with nothing. You don't get to know. You'll see something is in there because they have to mark it somewhere, but there's nothing, that we don't see anything. So
damn,
let's watch the sentencing. Sullivan's decisions could give us clues to how much he knows and how pissed he is at Flynn.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he's going to sentence him this time. I think they'll probably ask for another delay, but who knows, maybe he'll come back and be like, you fucking 10 years, you piece of shit.
Fuck, we'll see.
Who knows? But then we'll have a little bit of insight into what he has seen and how how much of an impact or what kind of import these conversations with Kislyak had, or if he might have more.
God, so many of them are going to jail.
I hope so.
It's crazy.
Guys, in a related Flynn story this week, he fired his legal team, and no one knows why. He hired new lawyers. There are two main schools of thought on this. First is that other lawyers were super, his lawyers were really expensive. And since they're only doing sentencing, that's all that's left to go, he might have just canned his pricey guys for cheap dudes to carry him over the finish line. The other school of thought is that he's considering withdrawing his guilty plea and backing out of his plea deal. And considering what we now know, that we have evidence of that pardon dangling, that he was threatened by Trump's team, and that it was Sullivan what really wanted to make sure we got the evidence of that pardon dangle for some reason, and that, you know, that he'd be smart to take, you know, to listen to Dowd. And then also, you remember Flynn was texting Matt Gaetz to keep up the good work bashing Mueller, and then send him a flag and an eagle gif that Dave Barr was nominated. So it could go either way. Most of the time I'd be like, it's too expensive, his lawyers, he's just doing the sentencing. But like, all this evidence and the fact that that Sullivan wanted us to hear the voicemail of the dangle pardon, and like, it makes me think maybe he's thinking of withdrawing his guilty plea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because Sullivan would know that. They would have had sidebar conversations or, you know, in camera discussions or whatever the fuck you call them.
Right, yeah. Right.
What his lawyers are going to do or are doing.
Right, or what they're thinking of doing, or mm-hmm. like, he would know. But backing out of his plea deal now would seem really stupid, unless he's promised a full pardon and maybe his son too. Because I think his plea deal, you remember our first episode, I was like, okay, guys, if Flynn goes down and his son doesn't go down, then that means Flynn's making a deal. And like, I predicted that whole thing.
Right.
And we talked about that and Flynn's son didn't go down. So I was like, he's made a deal. He's making a deal. And it wasn't until the end of the year we found out that he actually signed his plea agreement after he pulled out of the joint defense.
Yep.
Those were the days. Episode one. Check it out if you get a chance. Sorry about the sound quality. Also this week, after all the work to get the New York bill passed, allowing the state, New York State, to hand over Trump's taxes to the House Ways and Means Committee, turns out Richard Neal doesn't want him. He's like, nah, brah. And Jaleesa, you're going to go over that story for us later in the show.
Yep.
And then we have some news about the Senate Intelligence Committee, where Chairman Burr has summoned Walter Soriano for a voluntary closed-door interview and documents with various Russia probe figures. On April 5th, they sent a letter to the British security consultant, the Senate Intel Committee, to this guy, Soriano, asking for his testimony. The letter obtained by Politico gives us another tiny clue into the Senate Intel Committee's probe into what role Israel may have played in the 2016 election interference. So if this guy is British, how does it give us insight into Israel's involvement? Well, aside from asking for his communications with Flynn and Manafort and his connections to Oleg Deripaska, they asked this guy, Soriano, for documents related to his communications with Psy Group, Wikistrat, and Black Cube. Those are the big three Israel firms for social media manipulation, right?
Yeah, sounds like hip-hop, like rapper names.
It does.
Yeah.
Psy Group, Wikistrat, and Black Cube. And then the fist.
Yeah.
And then they want to know about any contact he had with Orbis, which is the spy-for-hire company started by Dossier author Christopher Steele. Mm-hmm. So he's involved pretty much in everything. And I don't even know. We've never heard of this guy. I searched him in our database of scripts. Never once come up.
Whoa.
He wasn't in the Minority Report from Adam Schiff, which is where we basically what we created our fantasy indictment draft from.
Yeah.
And that, like, we go back there and we're like, he was on there. Like, we usually see people on there. He's not in that.
A genuine rando.
He's a total rando. And we know him now. So you can't, it won't count as a rando if he's indicted, guys. This is the official, it's Soriano.
Yeah, yeah.
You need to pick him by name. And they also, Orbis, that drew, so like, do you guys remember Fusion GPS and Glenn Simpson? Mm-hmm. And he testified, and that's the one who hired Steele to get the dossier.
Right.
And then we have Orbis is kind of Steele's Fusion GPS. It's like a spy for hire, private investigator, dirt on politics and companies and stuff like that, like Prevazon. Mm-hmm. But that was Fusion GPS. But that was Steele. So he's involved in that. And if you remember, Psy Group was headed up by Joel Zammel. He's the guy that kiddie porn George Nader paid over $2 million to do. To have, you know, for something we don't know, other than he gave him a PowerPoint on how to interfere in the election.
Have we checked the Venmo? Do we know what it said? It's like $2 million for the stuff.
Yeah. Should have made that private.
Quote.
What little emojis,
know.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, just for election interference.
Right.
Slide deck. Oh, not like, the actual interference. Just
exactly.
The slide.
An American flag and then like a little circle with an X in it.
And yeah, then an eagle gif that totally. Flynn says. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so he paid $2 million to Trump at like within the week after he won his election. And even Trump and friends say they never hired them, which is so funny. So Soriano himself is virtually a ghost. Like I said, we've never heard of him. We've never written a word about him. All we know is he's a British security consultant, and he's affiliated with a London security firm called USG Security Limited. Want to know my beans? Here's my beans. We're just now getting more news on Nader, right? Because he came back in the country, got arrested. And in my hot note today, I'll be talking about new information on ongoing probes referred from the Mueller investigation about the UAE, Zammel, and Saudi Arabia, all part of the six-nation grand bargain struck by Trump, Russia, UAE, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Egypt, and Israel. And Flynn is now heavily involved in this, and we know Bijan Kian, Flynn's business partner's trial, is coming up next month, and I'm wondering if some of the discovery from that trial isn't leaking out, and we're getting to know these things. And that, yeah, I feel like either way, we'll know a lot more at the end of the summer. So.
Yeah, that's terrifying how like big this likely really is.
And speaking of Flynn and guys like Ted Malik, the secret subpoena battle over documents from the company from Country A is back in the news, right? This is the subpoena fight that's been going on for like a year. More than that, actually, we found out today. The D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals ordered the release of certain sealed documents in this mysterious legal battle between Company A and Mueller by June 21st. The three-judge panel rejected the request to release the name of the company, however. Womp, womp. I had seen some of the documents and thought the counsel had mentioned it was a bank, but that was incorrect. It turns out they were just citing case law, so that doesn't mean it's a bank. It could be, but my money is still on the Qatar Investment Authority. Mm-hmm. We did learn this week that SCOTUS rejected the company's request to consider its appeal in March. SCOTUS turned them down. Beans on that, we had. Beans come true. We also learned that Judge Beryl Howe stopped fining the company for contempt back in February. She started to talk about it. After it complied with the subpoena, they handed over about 1,000 pages of documents to Mueller.
Nice. So they stopped charging them $50,000 a day.
Yes. But the case dragged out until April because Mueller noticed a suspicious gap in the records. Like, we got nothing from this date to this date. So they kept finding them. And the judge finally decided they were no longer in contempt on April 17th. But as they got closer to that date, they were fining them up to $300,000 a day. They upped
it. Oh my goodness.
Mueller was like, we're missing a good chunk. And Beryl Howe's like, yeah, this is suspicious. $300,000 a day till you hand it over.
And that made him do it.
Yeah, and while we might not get the name of the company, we got some more clues. So the company handed over the documents in two parts, 950 pages, many of which had to be translated into English. So we know English isn't the official or primary business language of this company.
Good detective work. That would have went over my head.
Another clue is that the defense attorney seemed to argue that the records might not be complete when they were like, we're missing this gap. Yeah. The lawyer for the company argued that because it's a fledgling company, like Bezos and Steve Jobs and Wozniak, they all started their billion-dollar businesses in garages, so it's not so strange to think about it in those terms. That was their argument for not handing over that chunk of documents.
Interesting.
Mueller was not satisfied with that argument, and contempt fines, like I said, reached as high as $300,000 per day in April, but the company kept insisting it had handed over everything, and eventually the judge lifted the contempt order. Hmm. It's still unclear if the April 17th court order resolving the case... It came one day before Barr released the Mueller report.
What?
And so I'm wondering if she resolved it and took the contempt fines away because the Mueller investigation was going away.
Damn.
Another huge clue for us is releasing the documents this week when a lawyer said he thought he was going to have until March 28th to file her response. But since the timeline got cut short, they wanted to make sure the judge didn't think they were just throwing things in last minute. So this lawyer said... We thought we had till March 28th. March 22nd is when Mueller closed up shop. So this is another clue that
it was shut down,
prematurely. Mm-hmm. So I find it interesting that the prosecution in this case was caught off guard by this resolution by the end of the Mueller investigation. Mm-hmm. And this case began, we learned this, before Mueller was appointed, this case began. Because according to the documents, it was originally handled by Faruqi in the D.C. U.S. Attorney's Office, who then handed it off to Zainab Ahmad, who then handed it back to Faruqi when the Mueller probe was shut down.
Like hot potato.
Yeah. And that both Faruqi and Zainab handled the case confirms to me that the secret company is a Gulf State company because these are both fluent Arab speakers.
They're specialties. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I love the idea of a subpoena fight, too, because I think of a food fight. Just like throwing subpoenas everywhere. It's crazy. Chaos.
Food fights are funny. The one from Cheers is my favorite.
Oh, I gotta see that.
Oh, back in the day. Many of these documents, guys, released Friday are really heavily redacted, but the prosecution says it's very much a live issue that requires a great deal of resources, time, and attention by the government. They said this back in March, which is why we believe the subpoena is still, in fact, a live controversy that requires contempt because it goes to the core of this investigation. Mm. And Faruqi handed it off to Mueller because it went to the core of the Russia probe, but it's probably a Gulf State company.
Wow.
Which is what Mueller's team told the judge this. They said this back in March, like I said. He also said the issues in this investigation have not nor are in any way close to being resolved. Hmm. When Mueller closed up shop, he referred the case back to the D.C. U.S. Attorney's Office, like I said, and that's where the same prosecutor that had it before they handed it off to the Mueller investigation got it back like, oh, fucking great, you couldn't figure this out.
Yeah.
He's probably like, I tried. They just shut us down. You know, or she. Sorry.
You ain't got to go home.
Zainab Ahmad is. Yeah. A couple last-minute news stories unrelated to Mueller, but still very important, and some are funny. We reported earlier in the week during one of our Daily Beans episodes that Trump's State Department was denying requests from U.S. embassies to fly the Pride flag this month. Of course, during Obama's administration, Obama granted a blanket approval for all embassies to fly Pride flag during June.
Yeah, let your freak flag fly wherever you want.
But Trump ended it. He ended that, said, you have to ask me individually. But the good news here, we learned Saturday that many of the embassies are flying the flag anyhow.
Nice.
Even though they were rejected. Diplomatic missions in Seoul, South Korea, Chennai, India, the embassy in New Delhi, Santiago, Chile, the U.S. mission in Nepal, Berlin, and more shared photos proudly displaying their rainbow flag on social media.
Yay!
So big F you, a rainbow fuck you to
President Trump. Yes, the best kind.
It is, right?
Double rainbow, double fuck you.
Firtash is being extradited to the U.S. in July for his 2008 bribery crimes in India. He's a front man for Mogilevich. He is wrapped up in the Russian investigation, too. He also faces racketeering charges in Chicago. I don't know if he's going to face those charges when he's extradited to the U.S., but he's coming in July.
That almost sounded like a pitch for a concert. Like, he's the front man and racking up this stuff coming in July. Yeah.
Putin, motherfucker! That's what he does.
Pussy riots opening up.
Yeah, against their will.
Yeah, lube the truth tour. It's finally coming together.
Ooh, okay. Lawyers for the Noah's Ark theme park are suing its insurance company for rain damage.
There's a Noah's Ark theme park?
The company is suing to recoup $1 million in repairs after 2017 dropped 40 inches of rain on northern Kentucky.
Didn't they, like, read this in the book? They didn't see this coming? Should have prepared for that. Get your insurance for that kind of thing.
I think the actual flood, which wasn't real, but I'm sure it was more than 40 inches of rain.
We're all pretty like semi-atheists around these this parts, right? Yeah. I just think it's an interesting story because global warming could be the next flood. Yeah.
That's so funny.
I just love rain damage. Noah's Ark.
Yeah. Sometimes comedy just writes itself.
They're like, I'm not Noah. Aren't they? Isn't there something about like not worshiping or emulating false idols?
Oh, yeah. What Jesus is... Christ Superstar? Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't even matter.
Yeah, I don't know.
None of it matters.
No.
Impersonating as Noah, that's got to be some biblical crime.
Yeah, like impersonating a cop is a felony, right? Like,
yeah, or do you remember the theme park where that Jesus guy reenacts the crucifixion every hour?
That's right. Seen that around the clock, yeah. But I like the guy that was on our show, so I'm like, I'm a little biased.
I think that guy's a closeted atheist, though.
That's so funny. I think so, too.
God is a closeted atheist.
The guy we had. And then the friendly atheist is probably secretly religious. I like that.
We'll find out in the interview. I asked the hard-hitting questions.
Yes, you heard it here first, guys.
And my Matt Gaetz brings all the boys to the yard this week as Florida Rep Matt Gaetz was milkshaked, I think is a new verb.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
That's a thing that goes on in Britain, I think they started it. You throw milkshakes at political people you hate.
Yeah, it's like glitter bombing, but like way messier.
Yeah, Matt Gaetz took a milkshake.
Yeah, wow. One of his unsuccessful opponents in his race.
Yeah.
The Democratic candidate that dropped out before the election even happened. She did it.
I want to have like a party with like little themed foods, like the milkshakes and like covfefe. Like I gotta think of some other things.
When we do MuellerCon, we'll have milkshakes.
Yeah.
Oh, that could be dangerous.
But we'll drink them. No, we'll just drink them.
We'll have milkshakes in a room with covered in plastic.
Yeah. And no one throwing.
And we'll have pictures of, like, instead of targets, like, for gun shooting, we'll have targets, but it'll be Matt Gaetz and Nunes and Rohrabacher.
Like
and
a food
throw
fight.
Milkshakes
or a subpoena fight. Yeah.
The milkshake booth. We're going to make it happen. MuellerCon is real. We're going to do this.
Yes.
All right. And finally, this asshole lady that called Michelle Obama an ape on Facebook was not only fired, but she will now spend 10 months in prison for embezzling over $18,000 from FEMA disaster relief funds.
Wow.
And last but not least, Rudy Giuliani. We can't get through a show without talking about him. He could be under congressional investigation for his Ukraine shenanigans. And Jordan, you're going to have details for that in the Hot Notes, which is coming right up after this quick break. Hey guys, this is AG, and I'm here to talk about Noom. Noom is a habit-changing solution that helps you develop a new relationship with health and well-being. They use a personalized approach to tailor plans just for you based on psychology, so they teach you why you do what you do and how to break old habits and how to develop new ones by arming you with all the tools and knowledge you need. It's based on cognitive behavioral approaches, which is a well-studied method for overcoming obstacles and thought patterns that can derail us sometimes. Noom is not a diet. It's a logical way to develop the kind of healthy lifestyle that's best for you, and the tricks and tips they give you help you stick to it. There's no shaming, there's no judgment, it's just a great community of folks wanting to be their best selves. I have a very busy schedule with writing and travel, and I spend a lot of time in hotel rooms and on the road, and I run into a lot of roadblocks when it comes to trying to be healthy. One of my biggest issues is time management, and that's why Noom works for me so well. It's only about 10 minutes a day. Everything I need is all in one place. I used to have to manage multiple apps to track my steps, log my food, record my heart rate and exercise, get nutrition information, and chat with goal specialists, but Noom puts it all in one easy-to-use app. I started using it about 6 months ago. My goal was to ditch my all-or-nothing approach to dieting and exercise, because I would go super hard for 8 weeks, then I'd give up for a while, then I'd have to get back into it. So I'd lose weight and gain weight, which is bad for my heart and my mental health. And I'd feel so much shame when I'd mess up in my own impossible rules. So with Noom, I lost about 15 pounds up front. And through the moderation and learning to enjoy life with treats and relaxation, I've been able to maintain that. It's been a huge load off my mind, and not just about how I look, but how I feel. So I don't stress about it anymore. So Noom is designed for results. It's out with the old habits, in with the new. Sign up for your trial today at Noom, Noom.com/AG. What do you have to lose? Visit Noom.com/AG to start your trial today. Again, that's Noom.com/AG. Start losing weight for good.
Hi there, Diana Erickson here, host of the podcast One Sweet Dream, which is a podcast that shines new light on the Beatles, illuminating their story in ways not seen before. This podcast does deep storytelling to get to radical new ideas and insights that transform our understanding of their story. We've always known the Beatles story was exciting and epic, but there is an even bigger, better, sexier, and more beautiful story that's been hiding in plain sight. And that's what I want to share with you. Historians say that it takes about 50 years to tell the story of an event properly. And so here we are, a little over 50 years later, and have I got a great story to tell. So I hope you'll join us at One Sweet Dream Podcast, where we explore the dream that was and is the Beatles. Episodes will be released every Tuesday and Friday, so please subscribe to One Sweet Dream wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, welcome back. Hot Notes. All right, guys, welcome back. It's time for Hot Notes. And today, Jordan, you have a story about Rudy Giuliani and how he could be in some trouble, as we predicted. But first, Jaleesa, you have a story for us about how the House Ways and Means Committee not asking for Trump state tax returns?
Yeah, very weird. So this week, we learned that the House Ways and Means Committee Chair Rep Richard Neal is not too happy about enforcing a brand new state law in New York that allows the government to seize Trump's tax returns. The law was passed last month, and it allows the state to hand over any tax filer's tax returns to the head of Congress's Ways and Means Committee, in this case, Neal. And I will give him credit, though. He did request Trump's tax returns from Mnuchin.
Steve.
Steve. Yeah, there we go. Way easier. Steve said no, obviously. He even subpoenaed Steve, to which he replied with a Kanye shrug. So now the ball is in Neal's court to pretty much take them to court, which could take years to complete. But that's just how the government works. We talk about that all the time on the show. So I'm surprised that that's his reason for not wanting to do it. He says that it will be like tied up in the courts for years and years. So he doesn't want to go that route. But that's his job, you know? Yeah. So, I don't know. I feel like he's just trying to let them get away with it because he has ADHD or something. It's like he can't, doesn't have the patience to get through the court trials.
Honestly, I think what is really happening here, or what, like, these are just beans too, but because we can't really know what's in his heart. But I think if he's ditched his Mnuchin and IRS Redig subpoena for Trump's federal tax returns by just circumventing the whole thing and getting estate tax returns,
yeah,
it would seem political. Mm-hmm. And he wants to keep his argument of having a solid legislative purpose intact so that when it does go to court, it won't take years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's better, because I was just convinced that he was one of those guys that's like, I mean, it's still political either way, I guess, yeah, but I was worried that he was just trying to stay out of any of the battles, like just trying to avoid conflict, and that pissed me off, but this is better.
And I shouldn't insinuate that it would take years, because if he didn't have that argument, it actually shouldn't. It would be, he could, like I said, he could walk up and say, I hate his fat face and that's why I want his taxes.
Right.
And the court's not allowed to consider that, and it should take just as long whether he does that or not. But I think it's political appearances that he's worried about.
Totally. And he's worried about the battle with the Treasury Department themselves. Like, he knows Trump will push back, and it seems like he's just trying to, at least in this article, it seems like he's trying to avoid that battle. Maybe there's
they
a better way.
He's still, yeah,
he's already in the thick of one right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. The courts,
yeah.
But that's a good point.
Mm-hmm. And to take state taxes and then sort of fold on the other conflict that he's right in the middle of, I think does sort of look a little bit weak on his end too.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially since he's saying the reason he wants to see him is because he wants to assess the effectiveness of the IRS's program to audit annually the president and vice presidential taxes. Mm. And the IRS does not audit state taxes. So then what do you want those for? Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to have a reason. He doesn't have to have a reason.
So just
but,
do it. Yeah, yeah.
You know, then the witch hunt thing could become more real. I'm like, fuck it. They're going to say it's a witch hunt no matter what. Blow
yeah.
them up and get all the taxes.
That's
I
how
don't
I feel.
I don't give a fuck.
Right.
Totally.
That's what I think. But he's just taken it that this is the Pelosi way.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Which is step by step, ironclad case, don't blow your load, whatever. You
yeah.
know?
Which is why I guess they're in that job, yeah.
Yeah, I also think that state courts should be the ones responsible for overseeing those sorts of crimes, state tax crimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and maybe they'll pass a law that in New York that says we're going to audit the presidential taxes, state taxes every year, and then they do it, and then they can come out with it. Or maybe mm-hmm. Tish James will get them and somehow for some investigation she's doing. But the law doesn't say that she can get them. It's only the House Ways and Means Committee, mm-hmm. the Joint Finance Committee, and the Subcommittee on Taxation.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. All right. Well, thank you for that information.
Of course.
I'm mad that he won't take them, but you know,
same.
Whatever. Pussy. Puss up.
Oh, yeah. Puss up. He's a little ball sack.
That's
what it
right.
is. Yeah, yeah.
He's a little ball sack.
Scrote. Fucking scrote. All right, cool. Jordan, what do you have for us on the Lube the Truth guy?
Yeah, so Giuliani is probably going to start getting looked into by the congressional Democrats.
Yes.
And yeah, it's talk is a brewing. There's nothing legitimate yet that would that has anything on paper. But the probe is probably going to look into all of his overseas consulting and political work, specifically with Ukraine. I think that's mostly on people's minds, especially after the news of him trying to get dirt on Joe Biden recently mm-hmm. from a foreign government or foreign entity. And I think that they just really... I just can't believe that he... That's a different story. But why the fuck would you go back to the country that arguably is the origin of your former campaign manager's... Like,
I think he was summoned
sentence.
By someone, or he's trying to smooth things over.
I think that was his Russia. If you're listening, I hope you have the 30,000 emails. I think that was his that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Invitation for the Ukraine to interfere in our elections.
Yeah. Well, and then he pulled back when everyone was like, "Whoa, buddy, you probably shouldn't go there. That looks real bad."
Can't unring the bell though. He did what he set out to do. It's done.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And he's done this before too in so many ways. I feel like that's just kind of his move, right? He just pushes the boundaries and he's like, "Oh, I'll just moonwalk away, but you already know."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he wants dirt from that country specifically because it houses the company that his son works at that effectively got let off the hook, and people are trying to investigate him if there was any sort of agreement between him and maybe a foreign company. But every other statement that's come out on that case is just like there was no wrongdoing there. But then again, that's what everyone says, so who knows?
Yep.
But either way, Giuliani is also being a complete douchebag about this in response. Obviously, Daily Beast was the one that did this reporting, and so he gave a statement to the Daily Beast and he said, if they want to come after me, I gladly accept it, because we could just make the Biden stuff bigger news. Do it. Give me a chance to give a couple speeches about it and hold a press conference. I'd love that. I think it'd be a fun fight. I'll just compare it to all the things they're not investigating. If they want, we can have a big fight over this. So that's his attitude about this impending investigation. And
what a turd.
Yeah, total turd. And then they're also looking into his relationships with Armenia and Romania, which is interesting because we haven't heard that yet explicitly, really. Daily Beast reported that Giuliani sent a letter to Romanian President Klaus Iohannis in August 2018. I have no idea if I said that last name right. The letter was recommending changes to the country's anti-corruption program, but the contents of the letter diverged from the official State Department stance on the issue. So he was paid for writing that letter by a global consulting firm. And then in 2018, Giuliani apparently appeared in Armenia, and he was invited there by an Armenian businessman who lives in Russia.
Hmm.
And he spoke at a conference alongside a sanctioned Russian official.
George from the Comedy Palace. The guy who runs one of our premier comedy clubs.
He's awesome.
So yeah, there's a couple sketchy things to look into. That's at least three countries right there that they have leads on potentially. So I am thinking he could be a fantasy indictment league pick.
Giuliani, yeah.
The only problem with that is that they'd have to, this is a congressional investigation, they'd have to do
true.
A criminal referral to the Department of Justice, which is run by Barr. So.
Yeah, and also I was just thinking it's not unrelated. Would you count that as a Mueller investigation thing?
Yeah, I would, because he was Trump's Mueller lawyer. So Trump's
it is a fantasy league.
All
so
right, bada boom.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that story. Fuck you, Rudy. Let's see. Last year, guys, during the 2018 Mueller-palooza finale, our end of the year show, we had like 17 guests on, and they all told us what they thought the story of the year was, and our most important prescient guests, like Seth Abramson, were on there, and he said between him and us, we could probably run the Fantasy Indictment League, first of all, for the next 5 years and die rich before anyone nabbed us for racketeering. But this week, the New York Times published, he thought the August 3rd meeting with Zamel at Trump Tower was the most explosive story. It happened in 2017, but it was the biggest story.
I remember, and I was like, that's an interesting pick at the time, yeah.
Well, this week, New York Times published what could be the biggest news since the Mueller report, and I thought it important to discuss it. It's the story that he tells, that Seth Abramson tells. But they also drop some interesting news in this story. It's buried way deep in it. That these are certain ongoing investigations that sprung from the Mueller report. We kind of know what's behind some of those redacted bars in Appendix D. The name of this article is "The Most Powerful Arab Ruler Isn't MBS, It's MBZ, Who We Call MBIZA." And first of all, I love that the New York Times is walking around thinking that we're all holding rallies for MBS being the most powerful Arab ruler, though that title might have been in response to Trump, because he pretty much sucks the chrome off of MBS's trailer hitch on the monthly, if you know what I mean.
So true.
Just this week, we learned Trump secretly approved two nuclear deals to Saudi Arabia after Jamal Khashoggi's death, which is now outraging Congress, even Republicans, even though we reported on this months ago. But cool story, bro, Congress. And then yesterday, we find out Trump signed a deal the day before Memorial Day that circumvented Congress to sell $8 billion in new weapons to Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, the 9/11 people. So if you all think that MBS is the head of the universe over there, I wouldn't blame you. But according to this new article, it's MBIZA. So we know now that investigators are seriously looking into the campaign contacts of Israeli social media groups, including Psy Group, Black Cube, and Wikistrat. And that's based on at least one story we told you about involving the Senate Intel Committee summons of that Soriano guy, the mysterious London security dude that we've never heard of. And it is interesting that the MBIZA story dropped the same week along with Nader's arrest. And I said that a little bit earlier. But this week we learned that prosecutors are still investigating whether another top GOP donor whose security company worked for MBZ should have legally registered as a foreign agent. And that guy is Broidy. So that is one of the ongoing investigations, Broidy. So write these down for your fantasy indictment draft. Broidy, Nader, MBIZA, and anyone connected to Psy Group, Wikistrat, or Black Cube, including Joel Zammel. Ongoing open investigation. And the New York Times has implied there's a fourth post-Mueller investigation that is open and ongoing because there's a mention of it in the article and it references the special counsel. And myself and many others have held off on calling it official yet, but there are details according to Seth Abramson, author of Proof of Collusion and Proof of Conspiracy. So check him out on Twitter. Quote, prosecutors also questioned Rashid Al-Malik, an Emirati real estate developer close to MBIZA, the head of the Emirati intelligence. Mr. Al-Malik is also close to Mr. Trump's friend, Tom Barrack. And investigators are asking whether Al-Malik was part of an illegal influence scheme, according to two people familiar with the matter. So that's another one. Al-Malik and Tom Barrack. That's another.
All right.
Open and ongoing investigation. And we know that Al-Malik had pre-election contact with Tom Barrack. And probably Manafort, since it was Barrack or Barrack who recommended Manafort to Trump in a letter. We've all read that. And we know from our previous reporting, it wasn't just Russia that was involved in pre-election crimes, though that was the narrow scope for Mueller's investigation, as detailed and you know, scoped, I guess, by Rod Rosenstein and probably the White House. But these pre-election conspiracies and aiding and abetting, you have to always include aiding and abetting, dealt with multiple nations. And here are the basics, which we've discussed before, so I'm going to go over them kind of quickly. Six nations were part of a grand bargain, including Russia, which is the narrow tip of the iceberg that Mueller, you know, probed. Thanks, pal. But there's also Israel, Saudi Arabia, UAE, Bahrain, and Egypt. Three of these countries infiltrated deep into Trumpville, including Russia, Israel, and the UAE. Now get out your pencils again for fantasy indictment draft. The Russia infiltration was through Dmitry Symes. The UAE was through Al-Otaiba, or Otaiba, O-T-A-I-B-A. And Israel was through Kushner, Groner, and Birnbaum. Okay, so remember those names. And of course, there are a zillion other players, but those are the top guys, right? Like Zammel's in there, and Nader, for example, for Israel and the UAE, multiple other figures in Russia, of course. But the plan was that the U.S. would drop all sanctions on Russia. Russia agrees to withdraw support for Iran, clearing the way for the new Arab-Israeli alliance to remake the Middle East via Kushner, Tillerson, and Rick Gerson. And of course, the sharing of nuclear secrets and uranium with Saudi Arabia so that they can develop a bomb, and a host of other side deals, like the aluminum plant in Kentucky via Deripaska lifting sanctions on him. But those are really just red herrings. The main thrust is the Russia sanctions and the Middle East Marshall Plan, which we can now pretty much include dropping Russian sanctions as part of. Imagine for a second the deal with Russia is a side gig.
Jeez Louise.
Yeah. So this is the Middle East Marshall Plan. We talked about it in episode 6, and I remember saying, what if this is what it's all about?
Mm-hmm. It's like world domination.
I was right.
Some Dr. Evil shit.
Yeah, it's really gross.
$1 million.
And we know from the Mueller report, Russia started operations in 2014 with the GRU and the IRA because both Russia and the UAE knew Trump was going to run for president by 2013. Don't forget the head of the GRU writing that memo in 2014 about their new cyber warfare. We read it in Russian Roulette. And then the Miss Universe pageant happened in 2013. Dangling Moscow Towers started in 2013. And making inroads with Flynn and Carter Page, all that shit happened back then. The conspirators, Symes, Birnbaum, and Otaiba, along with the Emiratis, spent their entire summer trying to access the Trumps through Kushner. That's why he shouldn't have a security clearance. And they were already conspiring with Symes and Otaiba and Netanyahu by late spring. And then that August 3rd meeting happened with agents of Israel, Russia, the UAE, and Saudi Arabia. And Trump, and you know, Trump Jr. was the scorer of the century for these guys trying to make their grand bargain. Don Jr. and Stephen Miller were there in that meeting representing Trump. And four nations offered election assistance. And Jr. said, hell yes. So this New York Times reporting Well, very late is very important. There's nothing new here except now except those, you know, what they found from sources about ongoing investigations. But I'm starting to tie together this grand bargain, the importance of Nader, which is why he was probably offered partial immunity, how Flynn and Kislyak conversations are being kept from us right now, the fact that Nader spent a lot of time in Prague and might have been the one there paying off the Russian hacking hubs we just learned about a month ago, using Bitcoin, probably, which is mentioned in the Mueller report, and we know one third of his net worth is Bitcoin, and perhaps it was managed by a mystery company from country A. I don't know. These are super space beans, guys. That's all I got, but there they are.
That's amazing. I mean, terrifying, but amazing the way you laid it out.
Yeah, it's pretty scary.
Yeah, yeah. If it's not global warming, it's going to be this that does us in by 2050.
Yeah, we could all be done by 2050.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I'm just done in general.
Are you guys ready for sabotage?
Yes.
All right, so this week we found out, just last Friday, Mueller testified, and I thought he testified to Mueller's old grand jury. Turns out, Natasha Bertrand's reporting, Mueller testified to a different grand jury, and he has now handed over stuff, all of his texts with Roger Stone, and so we just got to really keep an eye on Mueller, and that is an open and ongoing investigation. We know now from, it's actually an OLC memo in the Department of Justice, much like the one that says you can't indict a sitting president, that says a grand jury can't do work on a crime that's already been charged. So this work that they're doing has to be for different crimes. So they may or may not indict, but keep Mueller and superseding Stone indictments in your back pocket. All right, you guys ready for the Fantasy Indictment League?
Yes.
I'm going to be indicted.
No, wait, it's going to be okay.
Indicted!
Honey, Dick.
Indicted!
Honey.
I'm going to be indicted!
Hold it, they can't. It's going to be okay. Just calm down.
I can't calm down. I'm going to be indicted.
All right, guys. I get to go first. I'm really excited because I'm picking superseding Stone indictments.
Hell yeah.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Good call.
Jaleesa, you're next.
Ooh, I will do that Sereno guy.
Soriano. Oh,
Soriano. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Do it. Do it.
Hell yeah.
It's different from Christian pick. Siriano, the gown designer.
Oh, good point. Good point. Ooh.
Hot mess.
I'm going to do Mueller plea deal.
Mm. Ooh, he's gonna plea?
I think so.
Nice.
Actually, he's been such an asshole, but I'm gonna hope he's gonna do a plea deal.
Yeah.
Maybe now that shit seems to be more real.
Yeah.
So an entirely new jury.
All right, my turn. Sullivan, old Stone associate, old Stonehenge.
Yeah, yeah, good. I will do my ex Broidy.
Oh, good one.
Because I can't let go.
Good one.
I'm gonna do Giuliani.
Nice. Okay. That's a big one.
Yeah.
It'd be worth a lot of points.
Staying on brand there.
I'm going to go with Tony Podesta, the other Democrat that was lobbying along with Gregory Craig.
That's smart.
Wow.
That is smart.
I will take Nader.
Nice. I'm going to do Psy Group.
Oh, nice. Yes. Along those lines, I'll do Zammel. I'll do Joe Zammel.
Tight. MBZ. MBZ.
Ooh.
Yes.
Nice.
I'm gonna do Tom Barrack.
I'm gonna do Malik.
Okay.
M-A-L-L-O-C-H.
Oh, in that case, I'll do Amalik, because I thought that was the one you were going for.
Oh, Amalik?
Amalik, yeah, yeah.
And I'll do Kushner.
That it?
Kush. I believe so. Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We're good.
All right. Cool. Yes. Guys, that is how we play the Fantasy Indictment League. Woo. And you can play along on our closed Facebook group. It's for patrons. You can become a patron and get our daily updates, our minisodes, our book clubs, our Mueller report reviews before we release them to the public, early access to live show tickets, along with private meetups, and of course, the Fantasy Indictment League, which
yes.
we post every Sunday night. So head to patreon.com/MuellerSheWrote. Any level will get you all those things. And any higher level, you'll get free stuff like shirts and mugs and kisses.
I feel like Amalik could be like a like alias too, right? Like Amalik trying to tell us something.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I was just stuck on that. Yeah. Amalik, yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, you're not. Yeah, I am. Amalik. So sign up, be a patron, search Facebook Friends, Facebook Friends of Justice. Go to there and search for the group Friends of Justice.
Yeah, great group. Love those guys.
Yeah, it's a really fun community, guys. Mm-hmm. We'll be right back with the interview, so stick around. Mueller, She Wrote is brought to you by Sagely Naturals. For years, I've tried to find a way to alleviate my stress and help me with my inconsistent sleep patterns. And then I found Sagely Naturals, and their products have really made a huge difference for me. If you're feeling stressed out, which a lot of us do, and a lot of us are in this political environment, or if your feet are killing you after a long day of marching, or your arms are sore from smashing the patriarchy, Sagely Naturals has CBD-infused lotions, sprays, supplements, and essential oils that you can make part of your self-care plan. And we talk about that a lot on our podcast, how important it is to take care of yourself. I wasn't sleeping really well, so I shopped their Dreamwell collection and was able to regulate how, you know, my patterns. And now I'm sleeping so much better, and I'm so, like, the stress level has gone down so low. I love it. Sagely Naturals was founded by two women back in 2015 who wanted to develop a superior product for self-care derived from the highest quality hemp-derived CBD. Sagely Naturals ensure all their products are completely THC-free, so you get all the benefits of cannabis without any of the psychoactive effects. And of course, you know how we feel about sustainability. And Sagely Natural products are made with honest, plant-based ingredients free from parabens, synthetic fragrance, artificial dyes, and sulfates. Sagely Natural helped me get back to doing the things I love, and I think it can help you too. So go to sagelynaturals.com/AG for 20% off your first order. That's S-A-G-E-L-Y naturals.com/AG for 20% off your first order today. sagelynaturals.com/AG. You'll be glad you did. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
So, Renato, do you still have your own podcast?
Yeah, it's complicated.
What's so complicated about a podcast?
That's the name of the podcast, remember?
Oh! Will you still be exploring topics that help us understand the week's news?
You bet. But we'll have a new name because we're going to be working together to explore complicated issues that are dominating the news.
Working together?
Yeah, you're hosting it with me, remember?
Oh, right. Wait. Does that mean our podcast is going to have a steam mop segment?
Let's not get carried away, but we'll discuss hot new legal topics. So check out our new episode coming soon to everywhere you get podcasts as well as YouTube.
So 2 weeks ago on Mueller, She Wrote, we spoke to God. So for equal time, joining us today is the editor of thefriendlyatheist.com. He's a YouTuber, host of the forthcoming podcast about the Pledge of Allegiance and the separation of church and state. Please welcome the friendly atheist, Hemet Mehta. Hemet, welcome to Mueller, She Wrote.
Hello. Thank you.
We're so glad to have you. And I have a couple questions for you. I'm really interested to get your point of view on a couple of things. Recently, Trump referred to the Mueller report as the Bible, because it exonerates him and his family. He was specifically speaking about Trump Jr. at that point, which it does not. But many Trump supporters insist on going to battle over the Mueller report when they haven't even read it. And so I tweeted a while back asking why it is that folks are willing to dig their heels in about something they haven't read. And what I got was a lot of responses saying they do this with the Bible, too. What is it about certain members of the GOP and defending things they haven't read? What's that about?
You know, there's something about taking a long, complicated document that it's one of those things you love to say you have read it without actually doing the work of reading it. And because you don't read it, you can draw whatever conclusions you want from it, and you can rest assured that a lot of other people are just going to agree with whoever sounds the most confident. And so, you know, I would argue a lot of pastors are very good at saying, whatever I'm about to say is right, and I have this book that justifies whatever it is I'm telling you, and you'll find plenty of pastors who say the exact opposite and do the exact same thing. And so I think the Mueller report functions very much in the same way, where you could, I mean, you can't argue that it doesn't say no collusion, or, you know, it obviously does say, here's all the evidence we have, here's what it does. But if you want to say that it exonerates you, and you say it loudly and confidently and repeatedly, then there's a bunch of people who are going to be like, well, I don't need to read it for myself because I have these people I trust who are telling me what it says. So we're good.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And we did see that woman in Justin Amash. He's a GOP representative. He's the one guy who's come out in favor of impeaching Trump. And there was a woman at his town hall who said, I was shocked. I had no idea there was anything bad about Trump in the Mueller report. And I think that just goes to that point.
There is a wonderful YouTube video that came out a couple of years ago, and I think it was maybe in the Netherlands, but basically a couple of guys said they were doing some sort of man on the street interviews with random people, and they basically took a Bible put the cover of the Quran on it. And they said, we want to read you some passages from this holy book, and we wanted to know what you think. And there were some pretty grotesque, violent passages. And they said, wow, what do you think about that? And these people are all saying, wow, we need to ban the religion. We need to make sure people who believe in that religion are basically, we got to keep them out of government. We got to make sure their views are not spread. And it was, then they did the big reveal and they're like, oh, by the way, this is the Bible. It's not whatever you thought it was. And you see the reactions on their face. And I think that woman you're talking about at the Amash town hall meeting, it was kind of the same thing where she has no idea what's in the document because she hasn't looked at it. And if anyone says, hey, did you know that, you know, the report said this, or that Trump was quoted as saying this, it would come as a shock to her system. And not just her. She's one person, but there's too many people where they'd be like, there's no way it says that in there. It's like, no, it totally does. It's on page 200, but it's in there.
Yeah, I remember that video. It was pretty unsettling.
You could do that with anything. Like, it's a constant game I know a lot of atheists play online, where if I've seen this on Facebook, for example, where if you put a nice image of like a woman in a meadow and a nice serene background, and you just put like Psalm 12, you know, 32, chapter 12, whatever it is, it'll sound good. It'll look good and people will spread it. But only a handful of people ever look up the verse and realize it's like, smash your child against the rocks.
Yep, that is true. So I think that does play a long way into it. Plus, there's also confirmation bias. People, they don't want to hear facts that might disagree with their feelings.
Right. And it's so much easier. Let's assume you're on the Trump side here. It's so much easier to say, well, he said it exonerates him and that there's no collusion, and everyone on Fox seems to think the same thing. What's the alternative? Reading it for yourself and realizing they're wrong? That's a lot of cognitive dissonance that you don't want to have to deal with. And it's so much easier to just say, I'm just going to take your word for it and continue living my life without realizing that I'm living a lie.
That's true. It is a lot easier. And I think that probably plays a large role in that. So you're a huge advocate of the separation of church and state, from my understanding. And I was interested in your thoughts about this new wave of anti-choice bills, anti-abortion bills coming out of red states, and how you feel about any, like, the chances of any of them being used to overturn Roe v. Wade in the Supreme Court. Is, first of all, do you think it'll make it there? And second of all, do you think that, you know, the fact that Trump has put Gorsuch and Kavanaugh on there, do you think it stands a chance?
You know, unfortunately, I don't have a lot of optimism that Kavanaugh or Gorsuch are going to do the thing that they're totally gonna do. Like, of course they are. That's why they have their jobs. It was an open secret, right? So, yeah, I am worried that it's gonna get to them. I am afraid that they are going to find a way to, if not overturn Roe v. Wade, then make it all but toothless. And I'm fortunate. I live in Illinois, and also I'm a guy. This doesn't affect me as much. But I live in Illinois, where we're passing legislation to protect a woman's right to choose. But what really bugs me about the anti-abortion stuff, besides the fact that this is what they're trying to do, is you have to go back to, what is it that conservatives want so badly that they want to overturn Roe v. Wade? And I would think their answer is pretty straightforward. They want to stop people from having abortions. And the thing is, we know exactly what that takes. An online acquaintance of mine, and someone who I know a lot of progressive Christians especially admired, Rachel Held Evans, she passed away a couple of weeks ago, and she caused a stir in the progressive Christian world because she said, and I'm paraphrasing her, she said, I am pro-life. I do want to reduce the number of abortions. That's why I'm planning to vote for Hillary Clinton in 2016, because her policies are going to reduce the number of abortions. Banning it isn't going to do the trick, but sex education will, and contraception access will, and better health care and child care will reduce the number of abortions. And so I would think if you're really opposed to the procedure itself, we know how to reduce the number, and they're choosing the worst possible way to achieve their goal to the point where it may backfire. And so even to like the pro-life world, it seems like all the things that are happening in state legislatures, these are the worst possible ways to, one, win people over on your side, two, reduce the number of abortions, and three, it could backfire in the sense that it, you may be, by having no exceptions to the rule, by making an arbitrary choice about when the ban can begin, you're making it really hard for those conservatives to say, yup, I'm totally down with this. This is legal. I mean, I think they're still going to do it. But what would they would have to write in that decision to say somehow this is all okay? You're making it really hard for them to write a ruling that will withstand, you know, more than a couple of years before it's overturned.
Yeah, totally. And it's true. We have proof. We have hardcore evidence that, you know, making contraception available and educating folks reduces the number of abortions. So it just leads me to believe that the reason they're doing it is not to reduce abortions. It's for something else.
Yeah, it's to punish women. It's to punish the idea of sex. And again, the way their decisions, the state laws are being written, you're punishing sex within a marriage if a woman decides she doesn't want to have a baby at that time or something like that. I mean, again, it doesn't the solution they are proposing doesn't even solve the problem.
Yeah, and it also flies in the face of smaller government.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's clear to me, and I'm with you on this, that this is just a control thing. It's they don't like the fact that women have sex or something. I don't know. It's just it's some morality law, which we should never have in the first place. So I want to switch gears here and ask you where you are, because I want to get back to the Mueller stuff and the release of his report, what's going on in Congress right now. And I wanted to ask where you are on the impeachment argument, because we learned today Jerry Nadler, the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, is now in favor of an impeachment inquiry and trying to push Nancy Pelosi into backing him to open an impeachment hearing in his committee, the Judiciary Committee, which could bolster the legal grounds for like their subpoenas, make it easier for them to get their materials and their evidence. But it would centralize all Trump investigations possibly into the Judiciary Committee, freeing up the other committees to, you know, pass legislation. So I was wondering where you stand on opening an impeachment inquiry, given knowing that the Senate will probably never convict and remove him.
I know the Senate will never do the right thing right now under Republican rule. So, look, I am absolutely for the impeachment proceedings. This is something that I think Elizabeth Warren said this week during her town hall on MSNBC, where she was saying, I believe she was saying, yes, of course, we should get rid of the Hyde Amendment. And that may be a politically risky thing to say. But I think her response to that was, but it's the right thing to do. And so if you're convicted and you're passionate about this thing and you're aiming in the right direction, regardless of what the political ramifications might be, you're going to find a surprising groundswell of support. And I feel the same way about the impeachment thing. I really don't buy the logic that starting impeachment proceedings or actually impeaching him in the House, that these things are somehow going to backfire when we've suffered through whatever 2 to 3 years of nonstop insanity. If anyone deserves to be impeached, it's this guy. And so by all means, start the proceedings, show the world, show the country anyway, that like Democrats can have the judiciary focusing on the impeachment question while everyone else is doing work. I mean, how many bills are there that the House has already passed that are just sitting there waiting for Mitch McConnell to give it a green light? So you have to do it because it's the right thing to do, because the country deserves that full investigation. It's bizarre to me that Pelosi would say, yeah, no, I don't know that we're ready for that. No, we've been ready for that for a long time. And maybe there's some strategy that she has in mind, but I don't know what that strategy is.
Yeah, I think it's just that whole myth that, like you said, they're worried that opening an impeachment inquiry will backfire on them politically, which there's no proof of that.
What do they think is going to happen if they don't open the inquiry? like, Trump's going to just use that as well. They had nothing on me, so that's why they didn't do it. They're going to spin everything as a victory, and they're going to spin everything as we're the victims of a witch hunt. So why? What's holding you back at this point? Because you could do a full investigation, come back and say, you know what? We did everything we could, and we got nothing on this guy. Or you could come back and say, oh, man, we have smoking guns left and right. And the Trump side is going to spin it the same way. So if you're worried about the backlash, it doesn't matter what you do. You're going to get backlash because they already are. They've already written the script. So at this point, what the only thing you're doing is withholding the truth or an investigation of the truth. That is bizarre to me. It's the same thing that, like, I've heard people say certain Democratic candidates, like, well, we can't vote for Elizabeth Warren because, well, they would go after her for X, Y, and Z. You could have the primary winner be a totally anonymous, like, cardboard cutout of an ideal Democratic candidate, and that person's going to get ripped apart by the right because that's what they do. So this idea that we should avoid an investigation because it might lead to backlash, you could sit on your hands and you're going to get backlash.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And then also another argument is that it'll divide the country.
And you know what? More than going on Fox News to try to reach a different audience, doing the investigation and saying, we did it the right way, this is what we found. I think if anything, you get a chance of getting at least some of those people who voted for Trump in 2016 to open their eyes and say, oh, crap, I missed all of this, like that lady. Maybe you get a chance of opening some of them up. And if you can convince a few of those people that, wow, we totally were on the wrong side about this stuff.
Yeah, totally. And also, you know, we have the argument, well, if we wait until after the election and we are able to flip the Senate and he somehow gets reelected, we'll have the Senate. But you still need 2/3 to convict and remove after impeachment. And we won't have that. I don't even think there's a mathematical way to get 2/3 of the Senate back in the next election. So that's moot.
I mean, again, don't do it because you think the process will result in the end. It's the same. Look, Democrats, what was their HR1 in this Congress? It was that whole huge bill on election rights and protecting voting rights, right? For the whole country. They passed that. It was a big freaking deal. And it's a good bill relative to what we have now. And they've done that over and over with a whole slew of, didn't they just pass the Dreamer, the thing to protect the people under DACA? They're doing all that stuff because it sends a message that if you give us the power to pass this stuff in the Senate and the White House, look at what we have in store for you. No one's saying, well, Democrats should just sit down and do nothing and go home for the next couple of years until the election. No, because by doing stuff, they're saying this is the country we want to live in. So give us a little more power so we can actually make it happen. Same thing with the investigation here. Open up the impeachment proceedings. Do the work you need to do. Show them you take the impeachment hearings seriously, because we've seen what happens when Republicans are in charge of some of these hearings. They're all little show trials, you know. And show people, look, this is what happens when you put responsible people in the room who take their job seriously. I don't know if you felt the same way, but I know I felt this way. When you see someone like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez go into any hearing, she does a really good job of preparing for whatever mundane thing she's supposed to ask questions about. And a number of Democrats do the same thing. They ask really good, hard-hitting questions. And a lot of times those become stories in their own right. And I wasn't surprised by that because I understood what type of politicians they were. They were serious about getting work done. And then you see people who ask questions on both sides, by the way, that are very chummy, that are just like, hi, how are you? Let's give you a softball question to just make you feel better. And it's pointless. It's like, no, I want the people in there who are going to do the research and ask tough questions, because those are the people who need to be in government.
Yeah. And I really love your point there, too, you know, where you're saying, look, a lot of these people against impeachment are saying, you know, there's no point in doing it. We shouldn't impeach him because the Senate will never convict. That would be like saying we shouldn't pass any bills then because the Senate's not going to vote on them.
And by the way, as someone who is an atheist activist online, I have a firm take on the God question. I don't know how many people, I'm never going to convince everybody. I don't think I'm going to convince like a ton of people that I'm necessarily right about the issue, but this is something I feel very strongly about. And I want to share my opinions on these issues. And by putting it out there, and I've heard this from bloggers and people on YouTube, anyone who takes a position on any issue, even ones who oppose me, I think the response has always been the same, which is to say, yeah, I get plenty of backlash. There are always going to be people who react and respond and don't like what I have to say. But we always get messages from people who say, I never thought about it that way, but listening to you convinced me that I was wrong, and or it got me thinking about this issue a little more closely. And this is down the line. Anyone who has done this for any length of time has almost certainly gotten a message like that, because when you're confident and you know you're right about this issue, whatever that issue is, that is infectious in the best possible way. And people need to see that and they need to hear that. And sometimes if you could present it in a way that will connect with them,
yeah,
they will come, they'll come on your side eventually. And but you don't know how many people, and you don't know when it's going to happen. So all you can do is to say, I feel strongly about this, so let me make my case.
Yeah, that's a good point, Hemant. And I'm one of those people. I used to, you know, prior to the Mueller report coming out, prior to the, you know, the Flynn voicemail, prior to the Flynn documents and his sentencing memos being unredacted for the public view, I was in the boat with Pelosi saying, nah, you know what, it could just be too politically risky. And, you know, we don't want to blow up the election. We have to get him out of office. And if 2020, as soon as we can do it, we can do it. Then that's what we should, that's what we need to do. But after speaking to many experts, many friends of mine, a lot of folks who I've had on the show, and after the Mueller report came out, of course, with the, you know, all the instances of obstruction of justice, and I changed my mind. It is possible. It does happen with people once, you know, once they become more educated about a subject to change their mind. And so I think that that also, you're right, lends to the importance of just saying what we believe is to be true.
And can you imagine what sort of reaction from progressives, from the people who are going to vote for Democrats in the freaking midterms? You know, like, what would the reaction be if they're saying, well, we have all the information we need, but it's politically risky, so let's not touch it? It's like, no, what's the, why would I vote for you? You're not giving me the incentive to work my butt off to get you elected and get everyone I know to vote for you. When, what are we going to say? Well, we elected them, and then they were, yeah, like, well, it's never going to work, so let's not do it. It's like such an, it's such the opposite from, you know, hope or whatever slogan, inspirational slogan you want to give. It's just a, well, let's throw our hands up in the air and surrender because, well, we don't have all the power, but like, you could shape people's convictions.
Yeah. And that was actually the turning point for me. So, so many people saying, you know, I understand that you're worried about the implications of a failed impeachment, but you need to think hard about the implications of not impeaching or not even opening an inquiry and how that looks and what message that sends.
And that is such an important thing. Like, show me what you would do if we gave you even more power. Because again, if you're passing all these bills that are going to change the country for the better, like, wow, I want to do everything I can to make sure, at least in my community, we're electing as many progressives as possible. So yeah, like, do your job.
Yeah, exactly. And then of course, you know, when we do these things like pass the Dreamers Act and they don't get taken up in the Senate, that will affect the Republicans in the election. And I think, you know, if you open an impeachment inquiry and it makes it to the Senate and they don't vote to convict, then they are going on the record as having that stance.
Think about the political ads you get when you say, hey, my party passed this, 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 and this. Their party refused to even consider it. I believe, if I heard right today, Wendy Davis said she's jumping in a congressional race in Texas. And obviously she's big on abortion rights, and she's up against one of the most conservative guys in Texas, whose biggest claim to fame in the past month is blocking the bill to help struggling communities after a natural disaster. Like, I have no doubt, knowing nothing about her campaign itself, that, oh my God, those political ads write themselves, because when you have a do-nothing person in Congress, like, oh my God, it's so easy to just tell your district, look at what happens when you elect this guy.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think it's going to make a big difference in 2020, not just the legislation, but, you know, whether or not we open an impeachment inquiry. So I really appreciate you coming on today, Hemant. If you could tell everyone where they can find your upcoming podcast, or where they can go to find, you know, your stuff online.
Sure. So my biggest thing I do is writing for friendlyatheist.com. Everything I do, you could find on there. And the podcast, which is all about this deep dive into the Pledge of Allegiance, will be coming out in a couple of months. But there'll be more information on that at churchstateseparationpodcast.com, which will be up and running shortly.
Great. That's so awesome. I really appreciate you coming on today. Thanks again.
Thank you so much. Have a good one. It's nice to talk to you.
All right, guys, that is our show. What a fun interview he was.
Yeah.
I really like that. Hemant mm-hmm. Medegai. He's really a cool dude.
Definitely.
For an atheist, right?
Yes, yes. Or a closeted religious person. Haven't determined that yet.
Yeah, no, I didn't actually ask that hard-hitting question. I kind of hinted that I might, but I did not.
Oh, yeah.
So, guys, that's it. Do you guys have any final thoughts?
Thank you for buying tickets to our live shows. If you're in San Francisco, I think you should probably try buying a ticket, because it sounds like they might sell out if our VIP one sold out that fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a relatively small venue, so get them.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's August 30th, you know, make plans
now. Yeah. Yay. Why not? Make some plans. We'll look forward to it. I'm excited.
I'm very excited.
I haven't been to that city, and so this city, I haven't been there in so long. Somebody was like, gosh, for never having been there, you sure know a lot about not calling it San Fran, and how we like to be called the city, and how we all go,
thank you for telling me. I had no idea.
Yeah, or Frisco. Don't do that.
Frisco.
I learned all that from Eddie Izzard, to be fair. He does all of that when he goes to San Francisco. Oh, the city. Oh. Anyway, guys, I've had a really wonderful time. I hope you guys are doing well. If you need to take a break, take a break. Come back. We got your back. And take care of yourselves. Take care of one another. I've been AG.
I've been Jaleesa Johnson.
I've been Jordan Coburn.
And this is Mueller, She Wrote. Mueller, She Wrote is produced and engineered by AG, with editing and logo design by Jaleesa Johnson. Our marketing consultant and social media manager is Sarah Lee Steiner, and our subscriber and communications director is Jordan Coburn. Fact-checking and research by AG, and research assistance by Jaleesa Johnson and Jordan Coburn. Our merchandising managers are Sarah Lee Steiner and Sarah Hirschberger Valencia. Our web design and branding are by Joelle Reeder with Moxie Design Studios, and our website is MuellerSheWrote.com.
Season 4 of How We Win is here.
For the past 4 years, we've been making history in critical elections all over the country. And last year, we made history again by expanding our majority in the Senate, beating election-denying Republicans in crucial state House races, and fighting back a non-existent red wave.
But the MAGA Republicans who plotted and pardoned the attempted overthrow of our government now control the House, thanks to gerrymandered maps and repressive anti-voter laws. And the chaotic spectacle we've already seen shows us just how far they will go to seize power, dismantle our government, and take away our freedoms.
So the official podcast of The Persistence is back with Season 4. There's so much more important work ahead of us to fight for equity, justice, and our very democracy itself. We'll take you behind the lines and inside the rooms where it happens, with strategy and inspiration from progressive changemakers all over the country.
And we'll dig deep into the weekly news that matters most and what you can do about it, with messaging and communications expert, co-founder of Way to Win, and our new co-host, Jennifer Fernandez Ancona.
So join Steve and I every Wednesday for your weekly dose of inspiration, action, and hope.
I'm Steve Pearson.
And I'm Jennifer Fernandez Ancona.
And this is how we win.
MSW Media.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.